Hello, everybody, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap here on July the 21st, 2015. I am Y Ruler of Time here alongside Rilla T. Chris, how's it going?
I'm doing well, Nick. I'm doing very well. It's been a bit of a... I don't know the correct way to basically phrase it. It's been a chaotic, I guess, time, you could say, in some of our circles. For those of you who aren't aware, for a very long time, we distributed our podcast exclusively through Blip.tv, and now Blip is going away.
Yep.
It's finally closing after the writing's been on the wall for quite some time, so... it's affected a lot of people in different ways. We haven't actually been relying on Blip for a while now. It's part of the reason why we got everything onto Podbean and iTunes. Really, at this point, Nick still has Red Right to Lefts on his Blip. I still have some various other podcasts that aren't on iTunes or anything like that. So maybe you want to go in and grab those before August 20th comes around if you want to keep them, because there's no guarantee they'll be put anywhere else.
Yeah. I think that I'm going to attempt to keep some stuff up online. I mean, I'm not really earning revenue from Blip anymore anyway, so I'm not too worried about getting it on some platform that'll get streaming revenue or anything like that. But there may be some videos where I'm just like, maybe I'll just not upload this and see if people forget about it.
That's just like the same thought I have when it comes to like my early weekly manga recaps back when it was me in my fucking bedroom with the fucking like no lighting. I was fat and I couldn't fit into my shirts. But we are losing Blip, and it's somewhat sad. It was a big chapter in all of our lives, so I feel like we need to take a quick, very small moment here, moment of silence for Blip passing. All right, now let's have a fond sharing of memories. What was your favorite Blip memory, Nick? I'll answer it for you. Who broke the copier?
What the fuck?
You have to remember that commercial, Nick.
Oh God, yeah,
the Chili's commercial.
That was years ago.
Like the other person's like, I think it was Jennifer.
Yeah,
and she's like, "Fuck you guys, I was on break." Barbecue sauce. It's like this god awful commercial. If you
paper got jammed.
If you watched Blip back in like fucking 2009.
I like how Chili's was, like, convinced that that song was so good that you could actually parody it. It's like, no, nothing else works with that structure. Like, you can't replace any of those lyrics. You cannot Weird Al that song. It's already too stupid.
They're like, try to stop us. I'm like, well, all right.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, thanks for, I guess, the money. Indirectly, but directly in a way, Chili's.
Honestly, my fondest memories of Blip were the fact that they had those ads early on where you could click them and it would open a pop-up window, but then it would also stop the ad and you didn't have to.
Oh yeah, it was like the ingenious way to be like, I'm going to support the producer while at the same time minimizing the time I have to spend with the commercial. Because
and then the advertiser was like, wait a minute, this doesn't work.
They're like, hold on, wait a moment here. You're just getting rid of our video and getting a full ad revenue for it.
Yes,
you figured me out, my dastardly plan.
Yeah, earnings per view back then was awesome because of all the click through that you got.
Yeah, you just make so much so quickly, and by so much I mean not a lot, unless you were Doug.
Oh yeah, let's see that was also before like the skip ad button got put on YouTube too. So
yeah,
I mean for a time Blip was just a better video hosting service than YouTube was.
Yeah, I mean, it really was excellent for a while, and obviously for, like, fledgling producers, it was, like, amazing, because it was like, holy crap, I can get my stuff up on here, I'm not going to get copyright striked on it, and I get paid. Like, that's, you know, it was a win-win for everybody.
And then they were like, and also now we're working with YouTube. Well, see, because then you can, you know... broaden yourselves to a wider audience. Yeah, but the YouTube.
What concerns me, though, Nick, is Blip was purchased by Maker.
Yes.
And then Maker was purchased by Blip. So in a way... yes, it was a fucking... It was an infinity loop.
It's an Ouroboros of companies.
it was purchased by Disney. Maker was purchased by Disney. So, you know, by that, Blip became a secondary subsidiary of Disney. And we were essentially kind of, I'm trying to think of the right term for it, mercenaries of Disney, I guess you could call us. And I was really hoping to parlay this into a cameo in the next Kingdom Hearts game. Because there was a small chance, Nick. Some would say non-existent. I would disagree. But there was a chance that because I would also be in Kingdom Hearts, and then, of course, I'm sure going to have a Marvel world in the next one, that me and Captain America could fight side by side. I was really holding on to that hope.
I'm just imagining, like, this, you know, lineup of, you know, Kingdom Hearts characters with, you know, their Mickey Mouse shoes, but their Final Fantasy clothing, and then you're just there with your fluffy blue hats.
I might tell them Steve Dave shirts. The scowls, I'm just like, none of this makes sense! Why are you here? Because I get to be with Cap. You get to punch Heartless in the face.
I mean, I have not used Blip in a long time, but it was good for what it was back when, in, I guess, its early days. But then, I mean, everyone kind of could tell where it was going, and a lot of people were jumping ship. But at the same time, there are still a lot of people, some very good producers, who are going to be tremendously inconvenienced by this, because there are a lot of people who have put, you know, hundreds of videos on there, and they're just going to have to move wholesale now. And they're the people who did manage to be proactive about it are going to be fine, I think. And I think, but it just kind of sucks that, you know, a lot of people, you know, make their living off of this. And, well, I guess you better find a new home, basically.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a tough situation for some people, but hopefully it'll work out for them. Other alternatives are popping up, and I'm sure this won't be the last chapter in many of those books. But I just thought I'd bring it up there for those of you who hadn't heard and maybe want to be made aware of the fact that if there are videos of yours, or not of yours, but maybe of other producers or people you enjoy that are on Blip that you want to keep, definitely make sure you go in and get those while the site's still up.
I've seen a lot of people who are like, yeah, I don't care, just download my videos, basically.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, for many of these people, like, you know, myself, anything that's on there that's not on Podbean and iTunes already, go ahead and grab it, because it's most likely not going to be able to go anywhere else, so.
Right. I mean, I've put some stuff up on YouTube, some of the later stuff that I did, I cross-posted and stuff. Anything that's not on there right now, I think I'm going to go ahead and say, if you don't see me, like, post about putting it up, then feel free to assume you can steal it. I will make one note, though. Apparently, because Maker is like, oh, you know, if you want to become a producer for Maker Studios, then you can just do that. But some people have looked at the terms and conditions and seen one of the ones is, if you put stuff up here, we retain all rights for it. Like, all rights for it to do anything that they want with it. Edit it. They even use the term exploit.
That feels like we're like a language a lawyer should have been paid not to use in that.
So, you know,
what's a word to take without your permission? Exploit. There's got to be a better word than that. I'm going with exploit.
Yeah, let's just use exploit. Yeah, it's basically like they have a completely set of new set of terms and services. So terms of service, rather. And so that's why they didn't just say, yeah, we're just moving stuff to a new server, because you got to, like, sign an entirely different contract in order to do that. And, yeah. So.
And, actually, it was brought up another good one that people may not recognize. The Dragon Ball Evolution review and the Last Airbender reviews that we did with Paul and Todd and J.O., all those. I don't know if those will ever make YouTube, because they're full of, you know, copyright material, and I imagine those are just copyright strikes waiting to happen, so might not be a bad idea to look into seeing if those are going anywhere, and if not, making sure you keep them if that's what your interest is.
Yeah, I think that's probably the most important one of the stuff on my account is the Last Airbender video.
Yeah, so. Yeah, I didn't expect that to actually go on nearly as long as it did. I thought it would just be it. I really just wanted to get that fucking Chili's jingle joke in
there. Yeah, I know. And then I was just like, no, actually, there is important stuff to talk about now that I think about it. But yeah, I guess we have to move on now, however, to the manga suggestion that we took a few weeks ago and then delayed talking about last week because didn't think that we could actually manage to get anything out of it. Was there blood we could get from this stone, though, Chris?
I was like, Nick, I feel like I went into this series being very confused, and if another reread with another look at it, I feel like I'll have a better comprehension of this. I'll be able to really delve into my thoughts on this series. Nick, I have a what I feel is like a kindergarten level understanding of this series after reading it like 1.5 times.
I know exactly how you feel.
Before you get into anything on this, I want to try to explain what I believe is the premise of this series, and you tell me how close I may actually be.
Okay.
So, I believe this is set in the real world. It's set in, like, a Japan, like, Earth. It's, like, a kind of, not exactly post-apocalyptic, but it's, there was, at one point, some infection, some kind of disease that has spread amongst the populace, and it turns a lot of people into monsters. It seems it was initially distributed by some arm of the government in Japan, like the Department for the DFR or something like that. I can't remember the acronyms. There's a lot of them in the series.
There are a lot.
And we follow our lead, who is a artificial human.
Yes.
Who rides around on a motorcycle killing the monsters, and I think his goal is to save people who are immune to the virus. And he has, like, an AI, like, Cortana friend.
Right.
Who's, like, his, like, assist, like, the same Chloe from 24, like, it's just, like, that thing to be, like, look out! Or, you know, just, like, tell him shit. And then there's a bear whose mind was, he was originally somebody who was part of the group that distributed the virus, or part of that, like, early group. And he wanted to avoid being killed, so he put his brain in a bear because bears are immune. And he
because it only affects humans.
And he just is a bear now. And then stuff happens. I'm hoping I'm relatively close on some aspects of that.
I don't think that you're wrong on any of that.
Okay.
Basically there is this disease that's going through the air and affecting the entire Earth's populace. It doesn't seem to affect the main character, because he is an artificial human, a synthetic human. It doesn't affect the bear, because it's a scientist's brain put into a bear, but apparently he can just, like, basically be a human, even though bears' vocal cords and hands don't work the same way that humans do. So our artificial human hero, Kanoe, he is tasked with saving this one girl who is, like, immune to the virus, which they don't really know why. And so he goes around trying to find her, and he keeps on coming across these people that he has to fight and kill. At the end, he goes to Mars.
The last, like, 5 chapters of this series are ungodly confusing to me. And even when I read them, like, in a vacuum of, like, oh, you know, like, I'll just read these chapters and still try to grasp what's going on. Like, let me forget there's even, like, 60 chapters before this. Let me just read these chapters and see if I can understand what's going on. From, like, one panel to the next, I lose all concept of what's happening in this world. It is a very confusing series to me, Nick.
It is. Yeah.
I can't say it's bad, because I don't really know what's happening.
Well, the thing is, I don't think that it's really about the plot, because it's not... The problem with it is that it's not told in a way where things are really made clear. It's really sort of more meant to be a collection of, like, concept art, action scenes and stuff.
It is.
Than it is meant to be cohesive and, you know, intricate plot. There's stuff going on, but it's kind of takes a back seat to almost every chapter being a long fight scene, very art heavy and dialogue light.
It is a very cinematic series in that aspect, because there is a lot of very interesting uses of the art. It's tough, because I almost want to say, like, oh, the art in the series is incredible. I didn't think it was that great.
It's a little hard to make a bunch of stuff out.
Yeah, it's a very dark series. A lot of, you know, heavy use of black, because it's a, you know, dark, gloomy, post-apocalyptic, mostly destroyed world. Our main character looks like he's from Gantz, you know, in the black suit with the big black motorcycle. The faces aren't particularly all that appealing, but It is, as you said, it's mostly a series. Like, you can get through the first five chapters of the series, I think, in about 4 minutes. Like, they just fly by because there's almost no dialogue to it. And what there is, you might as well just be reading, you know, gibberish or French. Like, you're not going to have any concept of what's happening. It's just like, the NCR has taken the girl. Like, who's the NCR? What's the girl? Like, we have to get her back. Like, who are these people? And it's like, I'm a bear. Like, why are you a bear? I'm so confused. What's happening? And then you slowly find out some of those answers as you go along. But I had to look at a wiki at one point still to try to figure out some stuff, and that didn't help. It's tough, because I want to be able to give more insight into this series to particularly nail down, like, who would really enjoy this? What's the big, like, draw to this? You know, like, really dig into it. Especially because just recently, Infamous Planet did a visual recap of our freezing episode. And I was watching that again. I was like, oh, man, we really dug into that series. We really hammered out all the, like, fine details of that. And I'd want to do that for the series, but I can't. It's all a blur. The one, like, amusing moment I can remember is I feel like this guy...
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Well, I don't know. It's such a weird small moment, but this dude is basically, like, married to his motorcycle. And there's a moment where he's, like, rappelling down into a building and he's just carrying his motorcycle with him like it's a handbag. It's not, like, a dress. No one says anything about it. He's not like, oh, this is heavy.
It's because the AI is in a guy thinking with me.
He's just carrying the motorcycle like it's fucking luggage. Like, and then fucking goes off and riding it.
You'd think that there would be something where you could just, like, you know, it's like, okay, you know, broadcast, you know, into, like, something that I can carry around with me, like a phone or something like that. It's like, nope, I've got to carry you down so that you can be my AI down here. And, you know, have none of the advantages of being a hologram, as in being immaterial.
I don't have, like, one of those, like, little pads you could pop up on. Our technology advanced only based off of motorcycle delivery platforms.
Yeah, you made a note about Cortana, but, I mean, in the Halo series, I mean, Cortana is just, like, a microchip that the Chief just carries around inside his helmet.
Yeah, like, it's pretty convenient when all things are said and done. Could you imagine Master Chief had to carry a warthog around with him everywhere, just slung over his back because that's where Cortana's stored?
I don't know, those things are pretty easy to turn over. I don't think he would be too put out by it. He'd just, like, get to a place where he's gotta, like, crawl through a vent and be like, ugh, goddammit, ugh,
fuck, He's, like, hurling motorcycle fucking warthogs through walls to try to break through places.
I think that game would be far more entertaining if you just had a jeep you could throw at people.
Like, that's like the new... It's like, alright, we replace Resident Evil 4. You know, I do, like, escort the president's daughter around everywhere. It's a new quest. You have to escort your warthog around everywhere. Like, it still has, like, the annoying, like, voice to be, like, you know, a grating annoyance to you, but you can't even, like, shove it in a fucking dumpster when you need, like, to hide because zombies are coming. Just, like, get in here. Like, don't leave me alone, Leon Senpai! You're like, oh, where do I hide a jeep?
How do I cover a jeep's mouth? It doesn't have one! And that's not even talking about the fact that one of the main characters in this series is, yeah, a bear.
Yes,
The most Russian of all names. Like, is it Kozlov Levanich Gribnev? God, that's Russian.
It is. He is, on one hand, like, the best character, and on another hand, I'm like, what a disappointment, because you could have done so much more with the fact that this man is a bear.
Because, like, he becomes, like, this kind of helpless character before too long. Because, basically, very early on, Zoichi is tracking down this girl who is immune to the virus. Ion, I don't know how
you... Ion Green, something like that.
And so he tracks her down into this building, but it turns out that Kozlov is looking after her and trying to protect her. So, basically, the first time Kozlov appears is he comes out of the shadows holding a fucking rifle at Zoichi. And Zoichi is like, what the fuck? And so Kozlov goes, you act like you've never seen a bear before.
Yeah, like, this almost had the makings of, like, a comedy series at one point, because he's like, you know, he's just something like, you're a bear. He's like, I am. Like, nothing, no further address needed. Just like, I'm a bear. I talks. You're just like, wow, what a hilarious moment. I'm like, oh, that's where all the humor begins and ends in this series. It's never even made that big of a point. Like, yeah, this guy's a fucking bear. It's just like, it's so the artist is like, you know what I really want to draw? I want to draw a dude in a skin-tight black suit with a sword and a motorcycle, and his partner's a fucking bear. And he just found a way to make it work. He's like, what logic do I need to apply to make a bear talk and be a main character? I've got it.
Got a scientist brain. There we go.
Yeah. I took 10 seconds, figured it out, and I'm sticking to it.
Because there's parts where it's like, you know, the bear gets his claw ripped off, so he has a hook hand, and he has to ride on the back of motorcycles and be freaked out by the, as they're doing, like, these chase scenes on top of moving trains and stuff. But there, other than that moment where he's like, you act like you've never seen a bear before, there's no real sense of self-awareness to the series of how ridiculous it really is. So it seems like, okay, it's poking a little bit of fun at itself, but it's like, no, the rest of the series is just weird, artsy cyberpunk, and that's it.
Yeah, it's like, you'd expect, like, oh man, it's just gonna be so silly and over the top, and you're like, oh wait, no, I guess we're just... I mean, there is still, like, weird stuff. There's a scene where he's riding his motorcycle up a space station fighting, like, a Cthulhu-esque tentacle monster, but it's not, like, crazy, goofy, weird or anything like that. You're like, it's just happening, and I'm not really sure why it's happening. Like, you don't... They never draw attention to, like, how insane and zany this is. It's just like, oh, this is just where the plot's going. And I'm guessing that all of this makes some kind of logical sense because I've really lost the, like, connection of events that have led to this at this point. I don't know. I have trouble recommending this because I really don't have a good comprehension of this series. I guess if you are really into sci-fi, if you like kind of really artistic series, I guess this is a good recommendation. If you want to read the first couple chapters, be like, holy shit, it's a bear that talks, like, and that's like your go-to, I think that'd be great. And obviously, you know, we've had this recommended to us before by people, and there are people who enjoy this series separately, Weekly Manga Recap, who have spoken highly of it, so... Clearly, some people do grasp the plot and do have a big enjoyment of the series. I haven't heard people say it's awful. I just have very little comprehension of what's actually happening and what I read.
I think that if you like this genre of work, you know, cyberpunk action, then you will probably enjoy this series. But I'm not a very good judge of it because I don't read a whole lot of this type of manga. So... I mean, you know, I guess give it a try if you think that you would like, you know, the, you know, sci-fi type of series. If you would like, if you like, you know, Ghost in the Shell, but you don't latch onto it specifically because of the characters and the story. You just like the aesthetic of it. Then you would probably enjoy this. Otherwise, well, I mean, if you're not a big fan of sci-fi, if you're not a big fan of cyberpunk, you can probably give it a skip. You're not going to be missing out much because it's such a very light series, really. Not light, but I mean, like, unilateral. So there, that's it.
Yeah. I don't know. Did we get enough of that? Did we?
It wasn't a very long conversation. I think we went barely 10 minutes.
I guarantee next time we'll have a longer discussion on our recommendation. I've picked something out specifically for that point. Mm-hmm. But
awesome.
Yeah. So stay tuned for that.
Okay. Then let's, I guess, move on to the recap portion of Weekly Manga Recap. It's not Black Clover. It's the other one.
No, it's Best Blue.
It is Best Blue, right.
The shirtless swimmy man manga.
I had turned to Black Clover, and I was like, wait, is the other one before this one? So this is, I guess, a logical second chapter from where we left off in the last one, where Aono had convinced Sota to train him, basically. We are in Story 2, Hellish Training, which is basically the entirety of the chapter, is... Takumi vastly underestimated the amount of training that Sota would be putting him through and how hard he would be pushing him and how mean he would be during training. And it's not just physical stuff. He's also forcing him to watch tons and tons and tons of tapes so that he can learn proper freestyle swimming technique because his current technique sucks. And then eventually we reach a point where basically Sota visits Takumi's family at night in order to speak with his parents. And so Aono at first is like, oh, what is that guy doing? I gotta break this up. I can't, you know, let him do that. I can't have him invading my life like this. And, you know, because he's thinking like, oh, make sure he doesn't slack off on studying and, you know, get rid of all of his porn and stuff.
Well, that's what he imagines him saying.
I love how that, yeah, it's like, to ward off all the bad omens, throw away all the porn under his bed.
And that's like, that's where his final stand comes in.
No, I must keep my porn! He gets, so he like suits up, he like wears a headband and a banner that says privacy and freedom. He's got a megaphone ready. He just like actually has this, and he's like getting ready to burst through the door. But just as he's ready to burst in and interrupt the conversation, suddenly he says, you know, he's got talent, so please allow me to take your son with me. I want to show him a place he has never seen before. And, you know, I guess basically, you know, like, asking permission to take him away from the town so he can go to a different high school.
Yeah.
So, when he's about to leave, Aono comes out and approaches him, and he asks how he felt when he won the Nationals, and someone says that, you know, it was, you know, a feeling of, because, you know, all the training paid off, basically. We worked towards the top like our lives depended on it, and even now I still remember the moment when all that hard work finally amounted to something. So, I guess he just kind of summed up all of sports manga in general, didn't
he? Yeah, he's just like, it was really, really awesome. But he does have this great expression in the flashback panel to that flashback panel too, which kind of does actually convey that, like, you know, absolute enthusiasm and energy one would have from winning that, just like pure ecstasy, like, oh, I did it!
Well, you remember that Michael Phelps gif where he just goes, oh!
Yeah, where he like fucking like Dragon Ball Z power levels up and shit, yeah, Super Saiyans.
Yeah, I mean, it's like that basically, except he doesn't look nearly as constipated.
And he's already got the hair, so he doesn't actually need to be a Super Saiyan.
So he doesn't have to yet. So the next day, Aono shows up to training super early. He's already doing his warm-ups when someone actually gets there, and he's like, why are you being so gung-ho about? You're being really creepy. Did you get to see the panties of a girl you like? I guess that they are both kind of, yeah.
Well, I mean,
if he's thinking that, then maybe Aono is right to think that he might want to take away his porn.
Well, what I like is he's like, nope, there's a place I'd like to see even more than that, which I read as like, yeah, but I really would like, there is a girl's panties I really would like, yeah, to see that make me
sweat. I am straight, just so you know.
Yeah, just so you know, that enormous,
we're going to have so much homoerotic tension, I want to see panties, seriously. So, Aono basically, we just have this montage of more training and studying and so on and so forth. And Aono thinks to himself, I thought I was going to die so many times, but I'm no longer alone. The more I swim, the closer I get to that place. And skip ahead to, it's now March and it's time for them to head off to high school. And Aono bids farewell to his family. And his coach says, like, all right, it's finally time. Show them what you got. And that's basically. It's not really a surprising chapter, given how the last chapter went. You know, it's like, okay, you know, I'm just going to reiterate those points a little bit, and you know, now the story will actually start next chapter.
I like this chapter a lot, though. I really enjoyed this one. Last week I was kind of like, eh, it seems like a good series, but this is the chapter where I'm like, I really want to see more of this, because I like one that you took the time to kind of continue to develop this relationship between these two. Like, it could have just immediately been like, okay, boom, here's, you know, our supporting cast, boom, we're right into the plot, you know, here's something you could do. Like, but it's kind of cool that they continue to develop this idea, like, he's coaching him and he needs to see what this kid's got. You know, it has a bit of an Ice Shield vibe to it, where, you know, with the Haruma and this kid acting a little bit like a Senna, where you're just like, oh, he's got, you know, a lot of talent to him, but, you know, he's being run ragged by this guy. But it has this really sweet moment where, the, you know, he goes and hears this guy essentially, you know, bowing and begging him, like, you know, I understand he doesn't seem like he has the talent, he lacks a whole lot, but, you know, please let me take it and let me take him with me so I can show him a place he's never seen before. Like, that's got, like, an emotion and a power to it that I'm easily invested by, that I'm able to go right into this. You know, we had cross-manage for a while, and we didn't get into that until probably about, like, I think it took longer than that. You know, about 10 chapters in, probably, before we really started to dig into the series. But this one's able to get me into it almost immediately, just because it feels like there is a lot of energy and passion behind a series right off the bat. Like, I have no fucking care about swimming. I've never had much of an interest in you know, competitive swimming. I mean, Michael Phelps won the gold medal. Yeah, like Michael Phelps won the gold medal. I was like, yeah, like high-fiving everybody just the same. But if you asked me to name another player on the team, I'd be like, well, it was a black guy on it. surely his name was LaMichael Phelps? I don't know. But it's been compelling in that regard, that I'm like, oh, this guy is interesting. The art's conveying this idea of this is like true enthusiasm. He, the main guy, Amano, I think his name, or Amo.
I don't know.
He does seem like compelling lead. A little bland, but enough that I'm like, I could still follow this guy, and I'm intrigued by it. And I want to see where this goes. I mean, the chapter ends in a way that it's like, all right, next week, we very likely will basically meet our supporting cast. I feel like, because, you know, he's going to the new school, let's see his teammates, like, let's start introducing more characters to this. But I like the fact that we stopped and developed more of this relationship and took it to a level where we now see his coach supports him in the same way, beyond just one brief flirtation in a pool of like, oh yeah, I guess you have what it takes. You know, now it's like months of them working, and you can see he has that same devotion to him. You're like, okay, I can get into this. And I mentioned this before the show, but I'm going to mention it again on here. If you're a fan of this series, or if you're a fan of sports series in general, and you know that myself and Nick are huge fans of sports manga, between iShow 21 and Cross Manage, Real, Slam Dunk, all those series, Prince of Tennis especially for Nick, we love sports series, and this is a Jumpstart sports series, and we don't often get many of these, and it's actually asked in the magazine, or rather the survey this week, would you like to see more sports manga like Best Blue? So, if you have a Shonen Jump subscription, we highly recommend you go to the Shonen Jump website, you go under, I think it's community, and then survey is the last option there. Take the survey this week. You know, it only takes 2 minutes. In the time I'm explaining this, right now, with these words, you can open up a new tab, open up the survey, and I think by the time we get like 2 pages into Black Clover, you'll be one, done, and two, you'll also be entered to win free shit from Shonen Jump, because they do a giveaway for people who enter the survey. So I would highly appreciate it. I think it does good to just enter in the survey every week, just so you can give feedback to the Jump team and let them know what kind of magazine you would continue to like to see going forward. But highly going to encourage it again this week, because I really would like to see more sports series in this. And if this encourages them to do so, I you know, I'm absolutely for it. Mm-hmm. So there we go.
Okay. Let's move on to Black Clover, then. Black Clover, page 22, Assembly at the Royal Capitol. Asta's eyes are super shiny, like, in so many panels. Like, he just makes that same expression a whole lot at the beginning, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, Asta has only a couple expressions. He has the one expression where he has, like, a shoujo eyes, where he's, like, you know, like, the girl in the manga who just saw, like, the hot boyfriend character. But then he also has, like, you know, I'm completely shocked face. And then he has, you know, is my best friend face. He has, like, 3 faces. Yeah. Kind of alternates between them.
So, he and Noelle are traveling to the Capitol. Noelle is all blushy and stuff. More on that later. We basically find out that after Asta recovered from his injuries, he was told that they were basically given a summons to go to the Capitol. And so Luck is like, all right, yeah, that's awesome. And basically sensing this, Captain Yami was like, you're going to start some sort of trouble, so you can't go. You're going on a mission instead. Like, oh, okay. And then some girl in the guild is like, I'll go then. And she's thinking to herself, there's so many delicious things I can eat. And Yami's like, no, because all you do every day is eat, so you're not going. And so she makes a face, then goes, la, and stomps on the ground, and then la, and then jumps through the air. Whoosh.
I like to think
what happened. And that's
it. I like to think what happened in this scene is she's like, I want to go. And he's like, no, all you do is eat. She's like, what? And then her butt turns into a rocket, and she just fucking takes off into the sky, never to be seen again. Like, she's just like, la, and fucking fumes start shooting out of her legs, and she just takes off like a rocket and flies into the air and never shows up again.
What was her name again? Doesn't matter. She's gone now.
But the entire time, she's just going, la. She just fucking see, like, a little rocket-shaped girl in the distance. Twinkle. So by the way, at this point, if you had done the survey when I told you, you'd be done at this point. Just right. FYI.
So, Asta and Noel come across Yuno's group, and so Glasses Douche is like, oh, Asta, your injuries are healed. Yay! Then Asta's like, oh yeah, it's all thanks to Mimosa's magic, so thanks for that. And Mimosa kind of ducks away from him and goes over to... So Noelle has to approach her, and she's like, oh, what should I do? Whenever I see Asta, my chest starts to hurt. What's wrong with me? And so she's all blushy and got horrible crippling crush on Asta now. And so Noelle's like, he's short and stupid, loud. And she's like, well, yeah, but that's all part of his charm. That and the gap between it and his body.
Snizzap.
And, you know, I was like, no, he's an idiot. And then she, you know, is blushing and thinks to herself, wait a minute, why am I so desperate about this? He means nothing to me. And so, yeah. Now both girls have a crush on Asta, I guess.
Now, Nick, I may have discovered something very essential in this. Because in my experience in life, I've also said a few words to women, and they've turned around and refused to talk to me again. Do you believe, Nick, that I have women all around the world who have fallen in love with me? I've always just assumed it's revulsion.
Yes, I do.
Because they've sworn a lot, and a couple of them ran away. But I'm now thinking all of them have secret crushes on me.
So, they get to the...
Hold on, I need to start penning a letter. Dear Olivia Wilde, I remember our chance meeting at the Giant in Los Angeles. I believe you had secret affections for me. And I'll leave affections in there. I think she'll enjoy a couple misspellings.
Affections. That's all part of your charm, right?
When you hurled your Arizona iced tea at my face and screamed, go away. I now see this was love. Anyway, please send nudes. Sincerely yours. Your love.
You don't even have to include name.
Yeah, she's like, she knows who it is.
You know.
I won't even put return address. That's how sure I am.
You can't have thrown Arizona green tea at too many people.
Yeah, how many people did she hurl Arizona tea at?
We know that Olivia Wilde's a very, very violent person. So they get to the capital, and who should be greeting them but the fucking Wizard King? Lord Julius Novachrono, which is such a weird fucking name. So, Asta's like, who's that guy? And they're like, it's the Wizard King! What? Sound like an engine starting to... What? Yeah. So, the Wizard King greeted them, and so he... I guess is very curious about the wizard tomes that they got from the treasure trove, and so first he examines the one Yuno got, and he's like, "I actually can't, I can't read all of this. I can read it to some extent. Oh, could you perform this spell for me?" And he gets Asta eyes, like jewel sparkly, and then when Yuno is like, "No, I haven't been able to use it since we were in the dungeon," and so he keeps the shiny eyes. But he's crying from them.
Which is... it's a confusing level of depression. I'm like, is he okay? Like, is he gonna be alright, Nick? I'm confused.
But privately, he thinks to himself, ah, Sylph, the wind spirit of the four great attributes, has chosen him in this era. You know, has a special power. Presumably, I guess it's like there's like elemental spirits for like wind, earth, water, fire.
Yeah, it'll be an Ifrit. I'm trying to think. I'm going back to Tales of Sigmar.
There are four elemental spirits, and among the ones that include the name Sylph, they're called Gnomes, Undines, and Salamanders.
Holy, I was just about to say, I was going off of the summon spirits of Tales of Symphonia, but that can't possibly be right, because the Earth one was just called Gnome. So, perhaps it will be Gnome. I hope their gnome's cooler. The one in Tales of Symphonia was like some 8-foot tall fucking like head with feet that was just like, what's up? It was like, you're terrifying.
If I had to guess right now, then it'd be like, okay, I guess Noelle gets Undine then.
Yeah, I mean, presumably she's got water. Maybe Magna will get Ifrit or whatever they, Salamander, whatever they choose to go with. I imagine it'll be Ifrit. I mean, come on. Like, Final Fantasy's still pick over there. You gotta put him in.
So, the Wizard King is like, oh, you know, this spell will grow with you. Someday it will become an extraordinary power. You know, it's broken, basically. And so then Asta is like, oh, some weird writing showed up in my grimoire, too. And so he looks at it.
He's like, why don't you stop trying to get attention, you jerk? This is Yuno's moment.
Oh, just fucking wait. So the Wizard King says, I've actually never seen writing in this document. And suddenly the sword pops out, the new sword. And Asta's like, oh, this thing comes out. Oh, second anti-magic sword. And Asta, like, looks over, you know, he's like, heh, I got mine to come out. Shiny eyes. Yuno's just like, okay.
Yuno's like, were I in possession of a personality, I would say something here. But I, in fact, only have a broken spell.
So the Wizard King's like, oh, can I see that? And Asta lets him take the sword, and he's like, oh man, it's so heavy, I'm impressed that you can swing this thing around. And then suddenly he reacts to it as he realizes that the sword is absorbing his magic, and so he immediately gives it back to Asta, and he's like, I can't actually handle this sword. You can carry it because you have no magic. And Asta's like, how did you know I don't have magic?
Because everyone knows.
Well, the Wizard King says, oh, that's a very good question, isn't it? Anyway, well done! So, Asta says, can I ask you something? Oh, sure. How does one get to be the Wizard King? And Yuno has fucking jumped in and said it at the exact same time as him.
But like how, like, Asta's got this stern face of, like, conviction, and Yuno's just like,
poking over his shoulder.
Yuno's just like, yeah, do we get to be the Wizard King?
He's, like, looking over so he can say it at the same time, like, reading his lips for the first few lines and then, like, figure out what he's going to say and then saying it at the same time.
Yeah, like, he's like, oh, we'll say it at the same time. How do you get to, like, fucking...
How does one get to be the Wizard King?
I mean, Gray finishes in the wrong way. He's like, how do you get to the center of a Tootsie Pop? No, I was going to say Wizard King. Oh, I thought we were all... We talked about it as kids.
Wizard King's just like, you bite it. Come on.
That's not what you do with a lollipop. You're a sham, Wizard King! You're a fraud!
That never concerned me as a kid, because it was like, I don't care. I like the lollipop, but I don't like the chocolate in the middle. I can take my time with that.
Yeah, you're like, once the chocolate starts coming, that's Nick's time to tune out.
Yeah, that's, you know, when everyone else is just like, oh, time to get that delicious Tootsie Roll! I'm just like, okay, I'm done. Looking at it was 578 licks.
I don't know how many children, like, had orgasms while they were doing it like your version did.
I don't know how people who like chocolate are. You know that.
I feel like you have to have some idea.
Oh, people are just like, oh, it's so wonderful. It's an aphrodisiac. Chocolate's so good.
Wait, when you were a child, people were like, no, you can eat chocolate, it'll get your dick hard. You're like, thanks, Jumbo the Clown, but... I mean,
always act like chocolate is like a special candy, is my point, you know.
See, I grew up in I'm Hershey, Pennsylvania, very near to it. So chocolate to me is pretty banal. Like, it's just always been around. And actually, Nick, this leads me to a small tangent. You know how, like, if you're in Cleveland, like, you just grow up with, like, the Cleveland Browns. Like, you just know what it's... Like, you just, like, I know this team sucks, but they're my team. Right. I bet same thing when it comes to Hershey chocolate. Like, I'm very aware Hershey chocolate sucks ass. But it's my chocolate, so I'm going to defend it as the best fucking thing. I'm going to act like a Crackle Bar is the most amazing thing in the world. And that's why we can't have full-size bars. Like, no, you couldn't handle that much crisp at once. That's why you only get them in the miniatures. Okay? Because you can't handle it all.
It's like, yeah, I have Tropicana orange juice down here. You gotta have Cuban sandwiches.
I want a Cuban sandwich.
Cuban sandwiches are legit good, though.
They are. Did you ever see the movie Chef? With,
No, I didn't. That came out last year, didn't it?
Yeah, last year. What's his name? He did... Jon Favreau. He directed it, and he was the law... That made me want Cuban sandwiches like you would not fucking believe. Because that's the first thing he makes. He gets his food truck, and it's a Cuban sandwich truck. And you see them making it for, like, 30 minutes. Like, they just keep making fucking Cubans. I'm like, I want fucking one of those so goddamn bad. To the point where I spent, like, $30 ordering out from a place around here that actually made Cuban sandwiches. And I was like, this was good. This was not worth as much as I spent on it, though. But holy shit, that movie... One is a good movie, but two will make you hungry for a Cuban.
Anyway...
What were we talking about before this?
So, you know, and Asta have asked the Wizard King what it takes to become Wizard King. And so the Wizard King answers, it's merit. You can't protect the people with pride alone. Trust comes after you've built up your reputation. People want just one thing from the Wizard King. Achievements that mark you as the strongest. Produce results. Devote yourselves to building a reputation. That's everything. No one who's unable to do that could ever stand at the top. And so... You and Asta both clench their fists and at the same time go, bring it on! And, except only Asta looks like he means it.
Yeah, Asta's like, bring it on! You know, it's like, eh, whatever. I'll probably get it done anyway.
Yeah, I'm sort of broken. So, the Wizard King just thinks to himself, oh, your newbies have some determined eyes, William and Yami. And so he's like, oh, you know, we're holding a decoration ceremony for the Magic Knights who have been awarded for an outstanding number of stars today, and so I hope you will come and join us. And so everyone is, like, confused by this, which I would be confused, too. I mean, the Black Bulls still have negative stars, don't they? I mean,
yeah.
So, but they go inside, and there are these 10 different wizards lined up in two rows, and the Wizard King, you know, kind of... looks back at Yuno and Asta and kind of challengingly says, can you give me better results than they have? Right. Nothing else happened in Black Clover. Bleach. Chapter 635.
Oh, Nick, I'm so excited. I'm so excited if just for the first two pages. I couldn't give a fuck about the rest of the chapter. I honestly don't even think there is a rest of the chapter. This is just the first two pages of this week.
Hooded Enigma. So, we open with Lil Toto suddenly sensing, Baz went down after we let him fight alone, too. Isn't that right, Jirobak? Then again, who are we to talk, huh? And Giselle is dead behind her, and she's got this gaping chest wound. And she just goes, I'm disappointed. We could kill you. And Jirobak just turns around, goes back, and sits on his throne while she collapses.
It's like, well, later.
Finally some peace. I'm going to sleep now.
Yeah, I'm going to just rest for a little bit here with my giant fucking eyeball mess of a face.
So, Baz survived the purge in order to fight Jugo, so we got Flashback.
Yes.
Lil Tzotzo and Giselle survived the purge so that they could then die later, accomplishing nothing else.
Yes. And they do it in the most amazing way. It needs to become like a new segment on our show where it's just like the strange way characters in Bleach talk. Because I just need to address how this goes. Lil Tzotzo is like, can't believe you lost. Oh, wait,
again.
I'm dead too. Like, no one would ever tell, like, she's like, I'm dying. Not only am I dying, my friend is dead behind me. But I'm still cognitive enough to be a condescending shit towards you, Baz, because I sense you have fallen as I am dying. So my way of addressing this is to be a shit towards you, and then note again to myself, to no one else, I don't think you think Yuhabok cares, and Giselle seems to be dead, that we are dying, in fact, as well, and I am done. It's just such a strange way for a character to speak. It's such like, I know what Kubo's doing. He's like, oh, it's the misdirection. Like, she's just like, shh, you failed us. But then, like, cut and be like, oh, but we failed too! It's just so ridiculous to think of the character in that moment. That's, like, her thought process going through her mind as she's dying. Just like, you suck too, Basby. Oh, wait. Blah. Oh, my God. It's so... Oh, I love this series sometimes, Nick.
The only thing that I can think of is that actually maybe it was so that it could then be established that that's gotta be it. It's gotta be that because it was said that Juhabok, when he sleeps, Jugo gets his powers.
Yes.
So this was probably added in to say, oh, actually, Jugo just beat Basby without Jugobok's powers. So that's just the level that he's on. As opposed to, I have all the power of the Quincy, and so on and so forth. So, yeah. That's the only purpose I can see this having. But other than that, it's just like, well, it's a good thing that you guys survived that, so that you could then do nothing else before then dying in the most pointless way. Like, yeah. Oh, you die to the final villain. Didn't see that coming!
Yeah, but, like, not only that, like, you basically died off-screen, like, without even, like, a joke mention of what's happening. Just, we show up and again, and it's like, oh, this is our fucking swan song. Like, we are dying in this moment. Bye. And then it's like, oh, wow, that was only, like, 3 pages of Bleach this week, and all this happened. I mean, granted, the next 2 pages are Jugo's eye, his feet, a faraway panel of him, the chapter number, his face to be able to see the future, and then the chapter title. But still, only 2 pages in and we got all that. That's great.
We see some characters running around doing nothing, and then Aston Alvara is like, alright, I've lost them for now. Both Ichigo and that crazy ducktail? Ooh. Is he talking about his hair? He's got to be talking about his hair, right?
I guess. Does his hair actually look like a duck, though? Like a duck
I have tail? No idea. I don't know what a ducktail is. Nobody send us pictures. Shut up. So, then Grimmjow comes up behind him, and he's immediately like, oh god, there's someone behind me, and he runs away! And this is after he's like, I will take a cup of cafe au lait, then come up with a plan. Oh shit, someone's behind me! And the cup goes flying behind him. It's actually a really funny panel.
I actually do have a soft spot for Askanok Lavarna. I mean, beyond the fact that his name is amazing, but
right.
He's just becoming this, like, goober in Bleach.
So, Askanok Lavarna is like, leave me alone! Here, take this! It's a gift! Take it! And Grimmjow's like, you're not gonna get me with this! And he, like, fucking bats it away. Which is probably the stupid thing.
That's the thing, like, alright, come on now. Like, we've seen enough between... Like, he should see enough from the different Shinigami they fought, or just, like, even within his own group of the Espada. Just in the sense, like, you know this world, like, powers don't have to follow any kind of distinct rule. Like, they can be as, you know, obtuse as possible, from what we've seen. Someone hurls something at you. Why would your first thought be, like, let me interact with this as much as possible? Like, let me slash it. Instead of just, like, oh, it's so slow. Why don't I just move away. Like, it's...
Just jump over it and keep going.
Like, Grimmjow has to have some abilities. Like, oh, if I get hit with something that doesn't outright kill me, I become immune to it or something. Because if he doesn't, then he's the dumbest motherfucker on the planet and deserves everything that's coming to him. Because if you have no idea what your opponent's abilities are and you choose to attack it, knowing full well, like, the leader of your entire army in Hueco Mundo had the ability to mind control someone if they so much as looked at his sword. Why would you interact with something that someone threw at you that's, like, a mystery object?
Yeah, dumbass. So, immediately, it's like the poison kicks in within it, and Asenath Gavar is like, oh, it's a poisoned ball. Didn't your mommy ever teach you never to accept anything from strangers? If you can't do what your mommy tells you, you're in fatal trouble. It was explained to us over Twitter that gift is actually a pun because it sounds like the German word for poison, I guess.
Fair enough.
Meanwhile, the whole line of Shinigami are rushing off somewhere, and Sniper Dude is like, oh, the line is slowly falling apart as each individual's stamina, adaptability to Ryokyu's high reishi density environment, the severity of their wounds, all those factors are splitting up the pack. And then he just shoots Isagi in the shoulder and he collapses.
Good. They want this dude to, like, wipe out half of Soul Society.
Because it's like, I have a sniper rifle, I picked you off, fuck you.
Yeah. I'm the one Quincy that uses a gun.
So, he's just like, oh, I'm going to pick them off as they stray for the pack one by one. Meanwhile, Zaraki and Mayuri have come across Hooded Cloak Dude, and so Zaraki just goes, what's that thing? And Mayuri's like, are you asking me that, or are you just talking to yourself? I mean, I can ignore you if you're talking to yourself, but, you know, I don't know if you are addressing me. I can't believe that you got to be one of the captains, and you're asking me about something that neither of us have seen before. And then I'll just ignore you. It's like, you just talk to yourself too.
And then Gapachi's like, whatever, this hurts.
I'll just kill him. So, Zaraki rushes in, and then Mario goes, ah, wait! And Zaraki stops and steps back after he's still a fair distance away from the guy. And Zaraki's like, oh, it's okay. I only lost an arm. An arm which is still there and is just kind of bleeding.
Yeah, like, I was like, is it supposed to be, like, so horrifically mangled that I'm like, oh, well, that's, you know, clearly...
Because we saw what he did to Yoruichi's arm. I mean, it destroyed it. It, like, churned it up like a lawnmower.
Yeah.
So he's just like, oh, I'm bleeding a little bit. I can still hold my sword, so, you know. Yeah. He's like, it's okay, though. I split the guy's head open and blood starts to gush out of his head. And then the cloak explodes, basically. And Zaraki's like, what the hell is this guy? And Mario's like, is that a question, or are you talking to yourself?
Like, this is my new gimmick now!
He's like, you're talking to yourself. Shut up. He's like, that's the thing. I'm a hypocrite. See? It's a character trait.
Not very weird.
That was the chapter. It was stupid.
it was extremely stupid. It's worth it for the first couple panel like pages where it's just like, why would this ever happen? And the rest was just kind of unfortunately a little bit boring. What happened to Aizen? Like, the dude, like,
where'd he go?
The dude, like, they made such a big deal out of it. Because
they're, like, running around, so it's like, is he still in the chair?
Is this gonna be, like, the new fucking Grimmjow, where it's just like, where's
Aizen?
Where's Aizen? It's been a big deal. Why is this happening?
And then, like, Aizen confronts Jihabak, and Jihabak's like, oh, here, accept this gift. And Aizen's like, I shall not accept your gift. And he crunches it in his hands. Oh, God, it's really sharp.
Take that. Alright. Let's jump into Fairy Tail. I actually... Because it's now... Oh, hold on, wait a second. It might actually be an hour too late for us. I think the next chapter of Fairy Tail comes out in an hour. So I'll only be able to do one chapter this week. I thought it came out at 8 Eastern, but I think it's 8 Central. So we're just covering one chapter this week, which is chapter 444, Emperor Spriggan. And the cover page is Luvia. Which actually, you know, looking at it, actually is kind of a cool cover page. Because...
Yeah.
At first I thought it was like, oh, she's just in a dress, and then I just suddenly realized that the black is actually waves in the background that kind of mirror the ripples of her dress, which is actually a pretty cool effect. So, good on you, hero. I'm going to take that away in about 10 seconds, because we cut away to all the survivors are on a boat, and basically the island was destroyed, and they've rescued them, specifically noted by Gray, good thing there was a fishing fleet nearby.
It's okay, I can see their parachutes.
Yeah, like, yes, I guess it is very good that there is a fishing fleet nearby. Do fishermen normally sail by fleet?
Also, you're completely looking over the fact that Lucy is in the same panel, and she's, like, looking over the edge of the boat, and there is a survivor right next to her, looking at her ass and going steam.
Yeah, I was aware. Yes. There's a disturbing man who is shamelessly staring at her ass. Like, not even like, oh, hey, look, that's a nice ass. It's him like, oh! I think he's, like, fucking hard-pressing an image, like, a photographic image of what he's looking at into his mind for
I
later.
I must memorize every detail. Oh, God.
So Urza basically is analyzing the situation, and she concludes that the island didn't vanish. It is more so that it was shrunk. And it seems that Brandish has the ability to enlarge or shrink things, which is, transformation magic, but it's at an advanced level, far beyond anything else.
Well, if you can take an entire landmass and shrink it down to that, yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah. So, I thought she seemed to have some, it was almost like her abilities were terraforming, but I guess today it is just shrinking or making things bigger, which is fine. We then cut over to Wendy, who's like, oh, I hope Miss is going to be alright, because, I'm so sick, I can't use my healing magic. And then they talk about the kid they saved, and...
I still don't believe that's a girl.
Yeah, they say it's a girl, and I'm like, really? I mean, I guess it doesn't matter. Ultimately, this kid's never going to play an impact. And I was like, that really
just
seemed
you
like...
wait.
Yeah, okay, we'll have another...
We're gonna time skip again, and it's gonna be 15 years in the future so that kid can be used for fan service. Sorry, wait, how old do you think that they are? How old do you think they are?
That kid's six, so we'll cut about 7 years
six
into the
years,
future.
7 years in the future so that they can be used for fan service.
Yeah, she'll be the new tomboy character. Wasn't that your theory, though? That for what the fetish for this arc's gonna be? Wasn't it like a tomboyish character? Oh, you're getting close, Nick. I don't think my spider bondage girl's coming up.
I think it was a bunch of things that I predicted because I like predicted some sort of combination. I have to go back and listen to it anyway. So
Urza's like talking, and then all of a sudden she disappears, and everyone disappears because Mist Gun uses his not Mist Gun. What's his fucking name? Dornbolt. That's his name. His name's Mess, but I forget. I just call him Dornbolt. Dornbolt teleports them all with his magic. And basically they are in an underwater temple for some reason, like they specifically note it's an underwater temple that in 5 seconds turns into a fucking submarine. So I don't know why they bothered making a big deal of the fact it's a temple.
So they could have a joke about the dragon slayers.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Cause now it's like, oh no, it's not a movie vehicle. Oh, it is. Gotcha. And this underwater vehicle is being piloted by Serrano, who is one of the
My God, the way she's dressed.
She's one of the stellar spirit mages that Lucy has fought at some point over her life. I don't remember when. I think she might be from the magic.
It was a long time ago because
I think it's from the magic festival or the tournament thing that they did, I can't remember. All of her fucking stellar spirit mage opponents are fucking as indistinguishable from the next as possible. They never have any traits beyond the fact that they're attracted to women, and she happens to be in a bikini, which Gray notes while he's naked. He's like, what's with the bikini? And I'm like, why does it matter? All of your other female characters in this scene are in bikinis, so why does this one shock you? We then cut over to her butt in the bikini, jiggling about, and someone screams out, we have a winner! She's saying, we have a winner. And then Urza gets very upset that it's not Eric. Holy shit, there's so much, like, I don't even know. It's her. She walks up to Lucy and grabs her by the strap of her bikini. Holy shit, this should just be a Skinamax movie at this point. There's so much bikini antics going on here. And she's like, oh, I killed Karen, who was somebody. I don't remember that either. And she's like, I wouldn't forget that if I were you. And for as serious as that line seems to be, or is it kind of deflects it pretty easily, I've been nonchalantly being like, quit it. And she's like, okay.
Karen Lilica was a mage who belonged to the Blue Pegasus Guild, as well as being a famed celestial spirit mage and former owner of Ares and Loke. She was killed by Angel of the Arusian Sace. So that's where you
Oh, okay. She's the one who had Pisces originally.
So, okay. Let's see.
Or not Pisces. Gemini. Gemini originally.
Blah, blah, blah.
If you told me this was the girl from the Magic Tournament, though, I'd have been like, yeah, of course it's her. Or if you told me it's... God, I feel like there's other Stellar Spirit Mages. I'm just forgetting all of them at this point. But I really feel like it's just one other... It's just one character in slightly different hairstyles.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh, anyway... She's like, I'm taking you all to where Makarov is. And Urza's shocked. She's like, you found out where the Master is? And her response is like, how do you like me now? I'm like, I still am not 100% certain who you are. We cut away to the capital of the Elbereth Empire, where we see Makarov.
Yeah.
He's in a garden, playing cards. We're like, oh, this must be one of those, like, political sort of capturings, where... They're allowed to walk around, but not, like, really free. Like, it's you know, like a proverbial cage. He's playing cards with some strange-looking guy with an elongated neck. He kind of actually looks like one of the Elcor from Mass Effect, if he's just standing upright a little bit. And they're doing
It's like
that...
he's got a hunch, but the hunch is in his neck.
Yeah, well, he has, like, a hunch, but then he has, like, a net that jettisons out, like, an extra 2 feet.
It's weird.
It's a very strange look, but that's fairy tale has this. And they're doing that thing that happens in fantasy series where two characters are playing a game. But
oh,
it's like,
let's use metaphors from this game, which the audience doesn't know the rules to, so don't do that.
And sometimes this can work if there's enough detail put into the game that it
kind
of makes
sense. If they're like playing Duel Monsters, sure.
Well, no, like, I mean, in Game of Thrones, in the book series, there's a scene where Tyrion is playing basically Savas, which is sort of a quasi-chess kind of game. And it's all made up, but there's sort of rules you can clearly pick up upon it. It's been mentioned throughout the series before, and it's used for more than just that one scene. But here it's just like, we're playing some vague tarot card game where, oh, you've lost. And the opponent character's like, well, you should have held on to your goddess card. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Radiant Historia. Wink, wink. Nudge,
I mean,
nudge.
I mean, look at this. Look at this. I mean, She really looks like Mavis. I mean, it's impeccable. It's amazing.
It's like the card was made to look like her.
Except this one actually wears clothes all the time.
Yes, she's not nude, which is much unfortunate.
Seriously, how old are you? That's really creepy. You should, like, try and put a sheet around that gem thing or something, you know?
Yes, seriously, it is ridiculous.
I mean, I know that her hair is super long and covers all the knotty bit, but, I mean, you can just kind of look at it at the right angles. Seriously, how much time do you spend with that thing? I'm very concerned about you, Makarov. You're going to get arrested one day.
You saw what happened to Jared from Subway. Don't let it happen to you, too.
Actually, Jared was not found guilty of any crime. Shut up! You know what I'm saying.
So we find out through this, you know, metaphor game that Makarov is not here as a prisoner. He is actually here to be a guest for them. He was received, and he's basically waiting, to negotiate peace with the Emperor himself. The Emperor himself isn't here, though. He's, you know, very busy, and, you know, Makarov's talking to this guy about, like, oh, yes, well, in our continent, we know him as a man who has conquered the continent by an iron fist, and his opponent's like, yes, yeah, the king must show that side of him too, but, you know, it's more to that than meets the eyes. And we then cut away to, I guess, like a grand celebration that's happening. They're like, oh, well, the Majesty's finally returned. And Makarov's like, oh, yes, well, it'll be good to see him, and then returned to the guild. And Makarov sees it, and gasp of gasps, Nick. The Emperor is Zareth.
Yep.
And, The visor's like, oh, his youth strikes me every time I see him. How I envy that. And Makarov is in pure shock. So obviously, Nick, this must be completely new information for Makarov. Absolutely new. He could not have known that this is Zareth and still be this surprised.
Right.
So presumably, for the last year, Makarov has just been hanging out in this continent and never thought to send word back to the, like, fucking Ishgal to be like, hey, I'm not captured, contrary to popular belief. I'm working out diplomatic negotiations.
It's not like he's
Please don't invade this country.
It's not like he's on a spy mission or anything.
No, it seems to be very open. Again, he's not in shackles or anything. They don't make any sort of allusions to the fact, like, you're under our thumb. Like, don't make any poor moves, old man. They're just like, yeah, once it's all settled, you can return to your guild. And like, yes, yes, I can. Like, were they just
By
not...
By the way, wait. Nah, never mind. Flash, go ahead. Oh, I was going to ask you what the Emperor's name was, but nah, don't bother.
Yeah, like, at no point was he ever just like, what's his name? Like, whoa. Well, actually, to be fair, they do call him Emperor Spriggan. So right. Maybe he was just like, oh, you sure don't have any pictures of your Emperor anywhere around here.
It's not like we have photographs in this story, so shut up.
I'm like, I'm 90% certain you do. You have a magazine full of bikini models. Someone must take photos of them. Unless they're being drawn into those. Why would you need models then if you just draw them? Shut up.
So, yeah. It's... Nekrov's the worst. He's so stupid.
Oh, and actually, as I was talking, the new chapter of Fairy Tail came out, so do you want me to live read this one, Nick?
Let's do it.
Alright, so, chapter 445, the grotesque fairy with a bunch of fucking characters on the front, I don't care. So, Albaref Empire. We see one of the Spriggan 12, the Winter General Invel. And you're nothing like Bucky, so I'm very upset that you have the name of the Winter General. And Zav's like, good to be back, Invel. Let's dispense with any more pleasantries and assemble the 12, please. Let's see, blah, blah, blah. As if one prepares for the first warm breezes of spring, yet cannot pinpoint its arrival, we are already assembled. Oh dear, I'm just some sort of capricious puff of wind now. And we can see clearly a female character as we see her breastesses saying, wind, a black wind, no, a deadly dark storm. Oh, God, this is going to be one of those, like, here's our fucking character list reveal chapters, isn't it? All right. So we're introduced to Demeria Yesta, the warrior queen, and Ajir Ramul, the desert king. And her response is, your majesty is no spring breeze. And his response is, desert!
I know what it actually is, a desert wind!
I like to think he's just the desert king, and his sole gimmick is just to be like, desert! Like, to every response he gets, he's like, I need to tie this into my desert king gimmick somehow. Someone's like, how are you doing today?
Desert.
Sand! What would you like to eat today? Egypt! Scorpion mummy! I fucking hate the desert king. Demeria and Jill, you both seem full of spirit. I'd ask you both to use more proper language when addressing his majesty. And what's his name? It's like, eh, fuck that shit. We're introduced to the next character. August, the wizard king. So this is the member of the Ishgal great wizards who, I believe, I assume from the name wizard king. I may be 100% wrong on that, but I think this is that one. August, so... this is our big guy from the other continent who switched sides. And, blah, 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 war. He actually didn't say anything about desert on this panel, so I'm kind of disappointed. The old man comes up, and he says, your majesty, I'd like to welcome you home for your long journey. It's my pleasure at the sight of you knows no bounds. And he starts walking backwards? He says, oh dear. And there's a thing here that says, shif, 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 and there's motion, like, little lines as though he's moving. I guess he's, like, moonwalking? Zareph says, never fear. For these past several years, the god has been in a merciful... Does the next page address this? It doesn't seem to. I guess he just moonwalks. What a fun trait. We find out this is the Empire's High Minister, Yajil, and he brings Makarov to see him.
I think he is.
Your Majesty, in your absence, a messenger has arrived from Ishgal. I believe you were informed. I wished an audience at the earliest possible moment. I thought a brief glimpse would be in order. Blah, blah, blah. Zareth's like, fuck your paperwork, you stupid douche. Makarov says, I'm pleased to make your acquaintance, and he doesn't, like, grow really big and then get punched out immediately, so this is an improvement of his character. He has a private meeting alone with Zareth. He's like, so you are the Emperor Spriggan, or are you Zareth? He says, I'm both. Kind of like how Gajeel, or not Gajeel, fucking Mistgun was Garrard. They're like the same character. I could be the same one too.
Yeah.
And then we'll go to Elderworld and there'll be an Otherworld. Holy shit, there is an Otherworld Xerif, isn't there?
Presumably, you know.
Holy shit, that's gotta come into play at some point.
I hope not.
Oh god.
That was so confusing.
I just terrified myself, Nick. Let's see. He says, if I was forced aside, I'd probably pick Xerif. I've been traveling the world looking for a reason to live for 400 years, but I accomplished... all I accomplished was preparing for the Dragon King Festival. Blah, blah, blah. I built an empire. And this is all to get your hands on Lumion Historia? He says, no need for code names. I know what's officially called. A carefully concealed magic more powerful than even the three great magics of the fairies. Fairy heart with, of course, a shot of fucking Mavis naked with her hair covering everything precious to her. I don't know why we needed another name, Fairy Heart.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, isn't that the same thing? I mean, we haven't even seen what it does.
So. Well, I mean, we know there's fairy law. Like, we know that there is supposedly, like, great mages, like, magics of the fairy, but, which is just a stupid fucking name. But, like, why does this have to be Fairy Heart? Like, why does it have to, like, what was wrong with Lumen Historia? To, like,
I don't
the
know.
Fact you kept calling it's Radiant same. Historia? I'm
like, is there a difference? Because it doesn't seem like, you
know. Like, no, this name has so much more impact. This name's so much cooler. I'm like, I disagree with that. Blah, blah, blah. That's because you are Xerif. God, there's so much talking. Is there no room for negotiation? Unfortunately, no. The Dragon King Festival is about to begin. The Black Wizard, the Dragon King, and you humans, the time has come to decide who survives and who doesn't. You plan on starting a war? I plan to annihilate you all. You bastard! We'll never let you take the First Master! Wap! Whoosh! Ah! I'm a bit grateful to you, actually. You raised Natsu for me. Thank you. Your death would be quick. Then I'll deliver your body to Natsu. I imagine he'll be rather angry. Angry enough to crush me. Do you have any last words? Tusk devil! Oh, so close. Spriggan is actually a name for a grotesque fairy. Oh, it's Dornbolt. This sucks. Wait! Hold on a second! Fucking Dornbolt bamps in! Fucking grabs him! Hold on a moment!
Oh my god, I guess his location correctly.
Dornbolt fucking bamps in, grabs Makarov, and then bamps out somewhere outside the fucking Empire to the rest of the group! And he's like, oh, you saved me! What the fuck was the point of this mission? Fucking Dornbolt could do that all along? The fuck was the point of this?
We need to take as small a group as possible. Actually, I can just teleport.
I can just teleport! I think I just know where he is!
There was no, like, establishing, like, how they knew exactly where he was. Because he teleports a long-ass distance away. Like, to a mountain on the edge of the fucking kingdom. You see, like, a tiny twinkle out near the castle and the buildings and stuff. He teleports fucking miles in order to do this.
There's no moment where someone's like, oh, thank God, my spyglass that I planted up on that balcony finally picked up where Makarov is, or something like, there's nothing identifying as to why fucking Dornbolt didn't just do this, like, 4 months ago. Oh, my God.
Oh, God.
Oh, I can't top that. Let's go on.
All right, so fucking Food Wars. Jeff Gekki knows so much. Chapter 127, Moonlight Whispers. Soma has got his cart, he's traveling around, and Megumi is, I guess, going along with him, too, and it's supposed to be the evening of the second day of the Moon Festival, and I guess Soma and Megumi are finishing up their, like, explanation of what they're doing to, the Natsuka? Sanosuka! Almost got it. So she's like, So she is actually explaining her, like, life's ambitions, and he's like, it is my grand plan to someday create a macabre dish, more morbid, more foul-smelling, and more delicious than the lives of even Kiviak and Sistroming, two of the world's most putrid gourmet delicacies. And someone's like, oh, that's awesome, Sadasuka! You should go taste some of my more interesting mashups someday! And Megumi's like, oh, man, they've got some weird stuff in common, don't they? And they're, like, bonding over their weird fucking combinations.
Yeah, like, oh, you should have seen, I put peanut butter on fucking octopus. Like, oh, you devil, you.
And so, yeah, so I was like, yeah, I heard that you had a stagiaire week with Mitrice Sako, and I could send her spit, sending you one or 200 letters condemning her very existence. But now I might actually forgive you. Someone's like, oh, I didn't know you two were so close. Oh, well, we seriously should have gotten together to talk long before the Sadatsuka. It's like, I agree, Yukihira! I agree!
It's like the friendliest evil, like, moment in the world. Like, you know, these guys are just going to be friends now.
Oh, God. And I love the little caption box that's next to Tadagoro. It's like, and thus two minds met that for the sanity of those around them, probably shouldn't have. Oh, God. Oh, jeez. So, Soma explains that, yeah, we've been traveling around and stuff, and Sadasuka, though, points out, it's like, I thought, you know, it wasn't permitted, you know, for people to actually sell their dish anywhere but in the specific spot they were assigned, which, of course, shoots down my idea from the last episode. But Soma explains that he's actually just been giving out free samples. You know, similar to how a bunch of people have been doing, you know, wandering around in order to attract people to their, you know, booth and stuff. And so he's like, yeah, I would have figured, you know, I could just take my whole cart around and do the same thing. It's also established that in addition to just giving out samples of the pork buns, some people were like, oh, you know, don't you have anything, like, lighter that I could have instead of just, you know, a big old pork bun? And so he used the dough to make the pork buns to instead make homemade noodles. And so, you know, using basically the feedback from a whole bunch of customers in order to expand the menu and draw more attention that way. Hence the origin of the noodles that he was actually selling in the last chapter. And basically this goes on for a while, just like explaining what he's doing, you know, Danzai noodles and so on and so forth. And he even, like, goes up to a guy at one point. He's like, hey there, how'd you like to stop by for some snacks? It'll cost you only the low price of 0 yen! And so Sadasuka's like, he's like a used car salesman. Which, don't used car salesmen try and make a profit, Chris?
Well, your used car salesmen generally just try to move their product. Like, they're just, it's just sale. Just sell kind of thing. So, and generally it's in the case of, like, I don't care what I need to tell you to get it.
Right. Buy low, sell low.
Yeah.
So maybe it's like, oh man, look at all these customers, although we are just kind of giving it away, so maybe we shouldn't be too happy. So it's like, yeah, maybe not. I love that delivery in his face. But he's like, you know, he says, it always starts out like this, you know, curiosity about the brick oven brought over a handful of people. Then after trying the buns, word spread, bringing more people. And in the end, it caused the booth to be packed with customers for the rest of the festival. But with that giant fancy pants restaurant the Chinese Food Society has across the way, I guess it won't be quite as easy this time. And Megumi's also like, well, and also, you know, the way the buns are cooked, you know, it's unique and stuff, but it's going to be hard for more people to figure out what the buns are like unless they see someone else eating one. And she points out that because black pepper pork buns aren't really a commonly eaten dish in Japan, it's not something that you can just say, like, oh, yeah, you know, I want to eat that. You know, like, over here, it'd be like if you sold something, you know, really obscure, as opposed to just like, oh, you know, do you want a hamburger? My hamburgers are really good.
Yeah, like, you know, you're getting that hipster shit.
And I love how they're just, as they're conversing, occasionally Sadasuka just pops up in the background. She's just munching in a pork bun. And
God. It does make me fucking want the shit out of a pork bun, though, Nick. God damn it, now I'm going to need to make Cuban sandwiches and pork and buns tonight.
Cuban pork bun sandwich.
That's too much, Nick. No, that's too far. I'm like, I can't.
Is that a pork bun with a Cuban sandwich in the middle, or a Cuban sandwich with a pork bun in the middle?
Yeah, I'm like, I can't comprehend what this is. It's too terrifying. It's too much. It's like someone being like, what if you had a triple Baconator? I'm like, technically they did have that, but it's still pretty terrifying for me to comprehend it.
It's like, you know, you can only have...
It's like the McRib. You should not have that much power in one sandwich.
So much protein, though, Nick. Oh, I mean, granted, it's 1,700 calories, but still.
Oh, God, now I want a Baconator. Anyway, so Soma's like...
Oh, wait, Nick, hold on. Wait, I live right next to a Wendy's. We'll have a fucking internet long-distance like craving satisfaction. You go have a Cuban sandwich, I'm going to go have a Baconator, and we'll fucking like send our vibrations to one another and satisfy each other's cravings for food.
Yeah, that's how that works.
I'm pretty certain it does. It's like those devices you use for long distance relationships where it's like USBs. To like
Let's not talk about those.
One's a vagina and one's a penis.
Let's not talk about those. So someone's like, oh, maybe we should come up with a dish that is obvious and familiar so customers know what it's going to taste like. Or we come up with something that's got a strong enough impact to peel them away from all that addicting spiciness. If we can push out a dish like that, we might be able to pull ourselves out of this hole. And meanwhile, we cut over to Alice's group, and she's like, first we'll put the meat in the bath circulator for a solid 2 hours to heat thoroughly. The vegetables will each be individually prepared in a steam convection oven to achieve ideal tenderness. Then we'll proceed to the seasoning step using the already prepared spice mix, blah-de-blah-de-blah-blah.
Like how half of her explanation just devolves into like, blah-blah-blah-blah-blah-blah-blah-blah-blah-blah-blah, the convection oven, blah-blah-blah-blah, thoroughly heat, blah-blah-blah-blah.
She's like a penis character. Wah-wah-wah, vegetables will each be individually separated. Wah-wah-wah, steam convection oven. Wah, wah, wah.
Like, even her, like, above her text, it's just defined by blah, 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 blah. Oh my god, blah, blah.
So at the end of this whole thing, when you're just like, and then that'll be it, and Hyman's like, what price will we sell these for? Well, in order to make sure we have a profit, it'll come out to 2 pint tickets, which is explained to be 20,000 yen, which is $200 for one dish. Oh, god. So I was like, that'll never work. You know, we shouldn't be trying to sell a dish that complex at a school festival anyway. And she's like, it'll generate so much buzz, though. He's like, no. It'll just drive us further and further into debt. So she, like, makes this tremendous puffy cheek pouty face. Like, no! And Kuroki is like, you know, maybe, Hayama, you could try to appeal to her ego. You don't have to beat it. Just flatter her when you explain stuff. No! That's why she's turned out like this, because you've treated her that way for years.
You're enabling her.
But Alice actually takes it very well. She's like, okay, yeah, I rescind the proposition I made. Let's go back to square wood and think of a dish that the customers who have come to the Moon Festival would want and love. And Hayama is actually very shocked to see this behavior. So it's nice to actually see them actually managing to, even though they're not really getting along yet, making baby steps at least.
Yes. It seems weird. This almost seems like our side protagonist group. Like, it's like, these are the characters we'll also be following. Like, we're gonna give these people a lot of development because these are like our B team.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where it's like, I guess in the beginning of the story, I mean, it was almost always Megumi who kind of went through this because she had all, you know, so little confidence, and she was constantly struggling in order to make her way while Soma was, you know, up at the head of the class competing against whoever, and she was just kind of like, okay, you know, I gotta figure this out, and you know, I'll draw on the inspiration I got from Soma in order to, you know, find the confidence to get through this and so on and so forth. But now she actually is developed to the point where she doesn't have to fulfill that role all the time, so we can actually jump between different characters who are struggling at different points, like how we had Hisako in the Stagiaire Week and how we saw we got a bit of focus on her struggles as opposed to Soma's. So, yeah. So it's nice to have that, you know, cast and be able to see, like, okay, you know, we get this person, we get this person, and we get this person, and so on and so forth. Because it was set up, it was like, oh, well, we got to focus on Aldini and this group and this group, but they're all at the head of the class, not struggling, so we got to have another group, a B group. And that B group kind of rotates.
Yeah, I like it.
So, Soma and Megumi seemingly make their way back to their original position with the cart, and so Soma's just thinking to himself, oh, what we got to do? We got to find something that we can beat the, you know, Chinese Food Society with. And Megumi's like, oh, you know, they've got the, you know, really good dishes, especially that mapo tofu that Kuka Senpai made. And so she says, oh, you know, you said you asked Irina Nakiri to taste your mapo tofu. So what did she say about it? So it was just like, she said, there's no way I can hope to beat Kuka with it. but basically, you know, Megumi, you know, points out, it's like, oh, your family's mapo tofu recipe is one that Mr. Joichiro himself came up with, and so if he could be Mr. Joichiro's flavor that completely, And someone just goes, nah, you can't really say he is. But you see, you can hear a, All right, I got an idea. And, you know, basically, he says, I'm sorry, we're going to need to start cutting back on sleep. Because there's something I want to try. I'm going to make a new Yukihira-style Mapo Tofu to challenge Kuga Senpai on his own turf.
Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
He's looking up at the moon as he sees this, too. So presumably he's going to turn to a werewolf and devour Kuga's throat.
Holy shit, that's metal. Like, I'm like, oh man, I...
You this gave is me how a, we eliminate the competition.
You gave me 1,000 ways to predict how this arc was going to end. I was not going to say by murder.
So...
He eats him with chopsticks.
So Soma's onto something again, it looks like. Interesting to see how this is going, though, and again, focusing on something other than just flat-out taste, I guess Soma has realized that they've got to have some sort of a real hook in order to draw the customers in. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm thoroughly intrigued. My Hero Academia!
Oh, God, shit's going down. So, last time, of course...
Nothing happened this week, Nick!
Ida had confronted Stain, the hero killer. It looked like he was not doing so hot. Or, well, actually, that doesn't happen until this chapter begins, does it, really? Meanwhile, Gran Torino went off on his own in order to fight one of the... what are they called? Fuck it. What do you call them? Shit. I forget what they call. One of the brain things, whatever. Nomu. A Nomu, right.
Yes.
Gran Torino leapt away to fight one of the Nomu. Meanwhile, Deku was left alone on the damaged train, but he realizes that he's like, alright, I gotta go and help him. So Gran Torino starts fighting with the thing. Can't seem to really do very much against each other, but the problem is that there are citizens that the Nomu is attacking, and so Gran Torino leaps to try and stop one of them, but then a huge wave of fire comes in and blasts the Nomu, and it's fucking Endeavor is there.
And that was actually really cool to me, too. Like, because he doesn't do it in like a... Like, we've only really known... Well, I've only known maybe he did something cooler before this, but I've only known this guy to be like, you're that douche who fucking's mean to your kid. But like, in this moment, you're like, oh yeah, he is a hero, and he's coming in to save people. And he's just like, don't worry, leave this to me, because I'm a hero. And you're like, oh, cool, I can be like, oh, yeah, fuck yeah, Endeavor, woo!
Deku rushes to try and help out, but then he suddenly spots down an alleyway Tenya. Or rather, he doesn't spot him yet. He sees, basically, a whole bunch of heroes fighting against a bunch of the bad guys, and he's like, oh, man, what's going on? And he realizes that Tenya has separated from his instructor, his mentor. So he decides to go and find him because he realizes that Tenya's probably going to be tracking down the hero killer. And let's see here. There's a hero called the Fly that's been taken down, I guess. Hand on face guy is like, ah, oh, well done, my Nomu. So... And then his teleporter is like, so you're not going to join them? I'm hurt, you idiot! That's why I brought them! To fucking love. So, yeah. I mean, he's just like, I will crush the hero killer, you know. You can... So, he's like, by tomorrow morning the world will have forgotten all about you, hero killer, because I'm causing more destruction and all that stuff. He's basically just trying to show him up, really. Meanwhile, Stain is fighting against Tenya, completely schooling his ass. Flips over him, kicks him in the arm with like this steel-toed boot with all these spikes on the end. Blood goes flying out of Tenya's bicep, and then he steps on the back of his head and drives him to the ground, stabs a sword into his arm. Ugh. It's kind of nasty. Chris?
Yes, I'm here. Sorry.
No, he was just worried.
I'm still here. It's fucking... It's gnarly the way he does it, too. He, like, fucking kicks him in the fucking arm, and then basically, like, curb stomps him, like fucking Seth Rollins. Like, just fucking...
Well, no, not like Seth Rollins, because he can't do that anymore.
Yeah, well, now he can't, yeah. But just fucking just clocks him into the fucking floor. Yeah, it's pretty fucking vicious.
So,
Stain just, you know, looks down at him and is like, "Oh, both you and your brother are weak. It's because you're posers." And Tenya's defiant still. He says, "Shut up, evildoer. The damage you did to his spinal cord means he's probably crippled for the rest of his life. He'll never be a hero again. My brother, he saved so many people. He's a leader. He's a great hero. He's a great hero who inspired my dreams." And he just says, "I'll kill you for what you did." And Stain points over at the hero that he took out earlier and says, "Save him first. Forget about yourself for a second and try saving others. Don't wield your power for your own sake, because getting trapped by your own hate and acting out of pure self-interest makes you the furthest thing from a hero. That's why you have to die." Holy fuck, this guy's awesome, isn't he?
It's interesting.
He's creepy and terrible, but he's like, but he's also like, you gotta get where he's coming from. It's like, you know, you guys call yourselves heroes, but, you know, you're just kind of glory hounds. And one out the way is like, you're not all very good heroes, I guess.
It is. It's hard to take, like, he has a correct point, but it's hard to be like, oh man, this guy's insane.
Well, he is,
like,
murdering people.
You are a monster, like, you are a murdering psychopath, to be fair. So, your logic's a little flawed.
And he uses that same ability to prevent Tenya from moving, holds the sword up over his head, and he's like, "Ah, oh, consider yourself a humble offering to the betterment of society." And Ida says, "It doesn't matter what you say now, you're still the criminal who hurt my brother." And then, coming in, bouncing off the walls, Deku rushes in and punches Stain in the face and knocks him off Tenya. And Deku says, "I'm here to save you, Ida." And holy shit, this is so awesome. It's so cool. So yeah, Deku here to save the day. And now I think that Tenya's chances of surviving are way better, I think.
No, he's gonna die. Deku's gonna kill him now.
Deku's just like, "You're not a hero, crush."
Yeah, Deku's like, "You lost, you suck dick." Boom, just breaks his neck.
"I don't want to be your friend anymore, Crunch."
Wow, this is pretty harsh.
Turns into a werewolf and tears out his throat.
It's like, I did not expect this.
"I lost all faith in you, so you have to die."
Stain's like, "Whoa, that was pretty harsh, dude.
You want to team up, bro?"
Yeah. He's like, "That's actually the kind of hero we need. The one who will kill slightly less admirable heroes." "Hey, go kill Endeavor. He's been a jerk to his son." Like, "Yeah, I've got him."
So this was a pretty awesome chapter. Can't wait for more.
It was a good one. I liked it.
Let's move on to Toriko.
No, Nick, we're forgetting One Piece.
Oh, God.
Which I know was hard. It was a memorable chapter this week.
Was it? Was it really?
A flashback, a very superfluous flashback for Sabo.
Did we really need this? He had memory loss, and then he got his memories back.
He had a memory loss in this flashback, because by the time we met him, he already had his memory back.
Yay. So yeah, Sabo is with the Straw Hats, and Law, and Kairos, and a few other wounded, it looks like. And they're in Kairos' old home, which I guess was still intact somehow. So they're letting their most wounded people rest. And Sabo is chatting with Robin and Zoro, and while Frankie repairs himself, which I like, just a little detail, we just got him all this stuff going on, he's just like, you know, tinkering with his face and stuff. So Sabo's like, "Oh yeah, we were brothers and stuff, and then we got separated, there was an accident." "No, an incident. Apparently, from that traumatic experience we saw in the flashback during the time skip, he lost all his memories from that, except that he knew that he couldn't stay there. You know, he was like, 'Oh, I just know that I have to get away. That's all I remember.'" And they're like, "Oh, his memory won't return." And so Zoro's like, "Oh, so you were suffering from memory loss that whole time?" And so I was like, "Yes. The only thing clear to me was the strong desire not to go back to my parents. I couldn't remember anything else." And then eventually they got the news that Ace had died, and he was like, "Oh, he's my brother! Ah!" And he passed out from shock somehow, and then woke up, and he remembered who he was, and he remembered Luffy and Ace and the promise they remembered.
And we see the flashback to when Sabo confronted Luffy, and, you know, he's like, "Oh, Luffy, it's me!" And Luffy is like, "I don't know why you're calling me Luffy. Look at this beard! My name is Lucy!" I just love that detail. Look at the beard, see?
Does Luffy have a beard? No, but Lucy has a beard.
So Luffy is, you know, he's like, "Oh, come on. As if I wouldn't recognize my own brother." He's like, "What are you talking about? The only people who would call me brother are Ace and my other brother who died even longer ago." And he looks at him and he's like, "Sabo!" And he like rears back and skips across the ground from rearing back, and then he like jumps on him and latches onto his face, and he's just crying and crying and crying. And he's slurring his words, which makes it very difficult to say, figure out what he's saying. "What had a goog thud you? We thought you were dead. What? God. Pull back a little bit on the slurring whenever people cry, please. I want
to..." I'd like to actually know what they're saying. I have to assume that there are words to this.
"I saw Ace die before my eyes, I can figure out. The rest is..." Jeez.
"But I thought that you died..."
First one is like, "I thought you were dead, I guess?" "What yeah. had a good thought you were dead? Welcome bomb the flubber aga
ue." I think that's just a Sim fucking dialogue. Like, you're just, this is a Sims quote, like, not a Juano.
So Sabo, you know, said to Luffy, "If you had died as well, I would have been all alone for good. So thank you for being alive, Luffy. Would you let me eat the flame fruit?" And Luffy nodded his head and was like, "Yeah, good idea. It's the only answer." And so Sabo, in the present, is like, "Oh, bye." Robin's like, "Already? Yes. I got a good look at him. So, here, you know, take this Viver card for Luffy. I'll take a piece of it." And so, yeah. "You know, remember that stuff that we did with Ace? Yeah, we're going to do that again. I'm totally not going to die, though. That's okay." So, you know, Sabo's like, "Oh, I'm sure Luffy will be a handful, but take good care of him." And Franky is crying because, of course, he is. And he's got exposed circuitry, so his face is smoking.
I didn't notice that touch point. Actually, it's pretty amusing.
Yeah. And then he leaves, and he gets contacted by Hack. And so I was like, "Yeah, I'll be back soon." And then someone, like, I guess, forces Hack to hang up.
No, it's a
no, thing. Sabo hangs up very quickly, and it's like, "Oh, why'd he hang up?" And so someone's like, "Oh, come on."
That's just a Sabo thing, as he hangs up very abruptly.
Yeah, so Hack is, like, swiping around and stuff. And then Sabo flies away on a crow with a flock of crows surrounding him. Like, giant fucking birds, basically.
But the weird thing is, he has a very ominous, like, the only thing of interest to me in this entire chapter is these two panels at the very end. Actually, just this one panel.
And you can produce it at any moment.
Yeah, and on the birds, it's like,
"And the birds talking!
Whenever I want." You're like, "Who is this? What a weird thing to introduce in the last two panels of this, that the birds he's riding on seem to be some kind of person, this perhaps is some kind of devil fruit ability." Like, it's such a weird thing to introduce in what was a very unnecessary chapter otherwise.
It was kind of like, come on. It's like, "And One Piece is on next week. Oh, great. So we'll be without One Piece for 2 weeks then."
It's strange because there was no necessity. There's nothing we really learned from this. Because as I said, in this flashback, he is shown to have had memory loss after his accident. But he recovered it in that flashback again before we got to the present time, essentially, because when we met Luffy, or when Sabo met Luffy, they knew each other. Like, he had gained his memory back. So the only reason that memory loss seems to exist is for the purpose of this flashback, in that moment where he learns that Ace has died, and
the purpose of it is to, I guess, explain why he never contacted Ace and Luffy, to let them know he was alive.
Yeah, it could serve to that point. It's just handled really bizarrely in that it doesn't, like, it could just have the same amount of sad, like, it's an unnecessary detail to be like, "Oh, he was completely, you know, memory lost from this," but it didn't really play any fact other than the fact that when he heard that Ace died, his brotherly bond suddenly spontaneously forced that memory back, and he got really sad and cried about it. It's just like, it doesn't really do a whole lot, because you're introducing all of these aspects of it in this chapter, and that's never a good way to go about things. I already could grasp that his moment of learning of Ace's death was probably a very traumatic and sad one. We saw it from Luffy's perspective. These three had, you know, were brothers. I could assume Sabo had a similar one. If you wanted to show that at some point later on, that'd be fine. It's just the way it's handled here, I'm just like, it doesn't have much of an emotional impact, because the crux of it is that he lost his memory, and that doesn't play a part in anything.
It's actually kind of lazy writing.
So. Yeah, it's a shame, because Oda's usually really good when it comes to any kind of flashback, but this is just a case of...
It's okay, Chris, we'll get that Bartolomeo flashback.
It's coming up soon, I'm guaranteeing.
It's gonna happen.
The other thing I do like, I just like how this entire scene that's just between Zoro, Franky, Robin, and Sabo, like, it's just an adult conversation, like, everyone else is passed out.
All the people incapable of being mature are unconscious right now.
Basically, yeah.
And even Franky is doing his, you know, overreaction stuff occasionally, but he is, one of the ones is like, I am an adult. I can act like an adult.
But yeah, I mean, look, I don't often poop on One Piece, but it happens sometimes that there are chapters I'm like, this wasn't spectacular by any stretch, so.
I also like seeing a little bit of Dragon in the flashback, and he's just like, everyone's like, oh my god, he's a, oh, Dragon, you're late, you've got an unconscious title, and he's like, yeah, I'm back.
Yeah, what up? And then Dornbolt shows up, grabs him, teleports him.
Oh god. Can't have anyone get up dying fairy tale. Anyway, Toriko. Gourmet 331, The Odd Mask, a.k.a. stuff leaks from people's faces in this city. It's creepy. So Komatsu is staying with Chaco's family. There's a creepy guy hanging outside who has, like, a creepy font, so, you know, his voice sounds weird. And they're like, why is he wearing the mask? He's like, oh, it helps ward off the spirits. There's food spirits out. He's, like, staring at Komatsu all weird and stuff. And Chaco's like, "Oh, my sister is a chef or something." Or
that's like how fucking we're gonna make Chaco's voice sound like, "Oh god, my sister's a chef. It's gonna be great." Oh,
she makes all the delicious food in the country, and I want to be a great chef so I can participate in that project too. Yeah.
Oh, Nick, I had an idea. By the way, she's
totally dead.
You know how we like occasionally, like if we find a character, we just want to like give him a wacky voice. I want to create, like, a randomizer full of bad celebrity impressions, and every song that we do was interested, click it, and it's just going to be whichever one of us can do the better version of that bad impression, that's just going
to
be the voice.
Now you have to do the voice.
Yeah, well, I need to develop this first. I need to find a website or something that'll work for this.
Random thing. Pick a random thing, I think is what it's called. Random thing generator, I believe.
You just
type out the different choices, and it basically just
Can I save this?
I'm not sure.
Because if I can, we're fucking golden. Oh, I'll have to check it. Well, I'm going to develop this and continue to work on it.
Alright. So, Komatsu is, like, preparing food and stuff. He's like, this knife isn't very good. Do you have anyone else? And so Chaco's like, oh, that's the special knife my mom always used. And so Komatsu takes it and he, like, sharpens it on his apron. There, that might work better. And he's like, oh, wow! And then they make this full feast. And Komatsu's like, hold on, before we eat, we should give thanks. You know, we humbly partake, you know, basically says, like, the Toriko version of grace, essentially. So they chow down, and Chaco's like, this isn't good. Komatsu's like, whoa, it's impossible! And I love the little montage afterward, because there, you know, Chaco's like, oh, I've got all this stuff that I've collected from great chefs, and I've got all these autographs up on my wall, see, and Komatsu's like, oh, I'll sign something, and Chaco's like, no, I don't want yours, you're not good. Oh, God. I love how much this bothers Komatsu.
He's just like, fuck you.
I'm a great chef, I really am.
I'm the best. It's hard for me to see, because I've been like on a really big Rocky kick, especially after last week where we spent like 20 minutes talking about it. So anytime there's a montage, I'm immediately in my head like, oh, it's on. No, I'm Rocky 4, where it's like, hot's on fire, stronger. I fucking love that song, Nick. It's so goofy. I can't wait for Creed.
So it gets to the point where they settle in for the night. Chaco is passed out. Komatsu is just kind of like, oh, I'm glad I got to stay to, you know, come here. And he's, you know, lying there right away. Here's Chaco's, you know, calling out for his mother.
Shut up! I'm trying to sleep! Stupid jerk kid! Crying about your mom. Punched him in the mouth. Go to bed! Boof!
Makes him bite his tongue. No, how does that taste, bitch?
Here's some Benadryl for you. That's why I call my fist. This one's Benadryl and this one's whiskey. One of these is putting you to sleep.
Oh, God. And we cut to all the other chefs, and Chin 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 is like, oh, those other chefs, you know, Warden, Chief, and Lala, they had strange masks on. And one of the others is like, there is no light in the world of spirits. It's a pitch black world without time, space, or concept. The souls that are revived have to wear a mask for a while, or else they can't live because it's too bright for them. And Chin Chin Chin's like, I see, so that's why they wear the masks. And Karibo is like, ah, but, you know, that talk about a project, just what is it they're creating that they go so far as to making deals to trade souls? It's like, oh, it's a new sense of taste. In any case, if we are to accomplish our goal, we need to participate in that project, too. Tomorrow is the earliest that we could possibly participate, assuming we win this match. But basically, they're possessed by spirits now, and that's why they wear masks. Which insinuates that the weird homeless guy who hung outside Chaco's home is also possessed by a spirit. But sure enough, he acts all creepy and comes inside the room and just leans over Komatsu. Which, by the way, Chaco is actually not there anymore. I guess it's because it's in the morning and he's already left. So, homeless guy from outside comes in, leans over Komatsu, and stuff oozes out of his face and drips through the hole of the mask. And just as it's about to drip inside Komatsu's mouth, suddenly Komatsu busts awake and he's like, oh, it was a dream. And then he goes outside and he's like, oh, where's Chaco? Old man, have you seen Chaco? And the old man is like, they took him away. He's in their custody now. I wonder if Chaco will end up just like his mother and have his soul sold.
You're creepy. I should stop talking to you.
No, Komatsu's like, what does that mean?
I just talk about souls. It's like, everybody.
It's like, it means he's going to have his soul sold. What's that mean? Have his soul sold. I mean, you're not very bright.
Hold on, let me. It's a homophone. I'm going to get a flowchart. Give me a moment here. So, S-O-U-L is like
I'm
that.
I'm Japanese. I don't understand English.
Alright, so, like, you're at an auction, and the item is purchased. They say, sold! And he bangs the hammer, right? And you've seen the Mortal Kombat movie. The very beginning, Shang Tsung says, I will have your soul!
I'm sorry, I was a Street Fighter kid. I never saw that movie.
How did you... The Street Fighter movie was terrible! I mean, the Mortal Kombat one had campy fun, at least. The other one just destroyed Raul Julia's career. You know, that was his last role. He died.
And then he had his soul. Yes, what are you talking about? I was like, look, I'm going to drip creepy stuff in your mouth now. Shut up already.
Yeah, well, I'm going to fucking spit feces jello into your mouth.
Feces jello.
I don't have time for this anymore. You seem like you have a lot of time. You're homeless.
Oh, God.
Touche. You got me there, Komatsu.
Got nothing but spare time, really.
Yeah, I guess when you put it that way, I could spend hours doing this. Alright, so what other things on your mind?
Shall we discuss other homophones that confuse you?
He's like, yeah, why is read and read the same thing, but like read and read, but like it's the past tense. It's tense confusion now for me that's really getting me. Ah, very, very insightful, young ward. Well, if I have a song I can do about this.
He pulls out this chalkboard.
Yeah, he's like, if I can play a song for you. Well, it's like this entire musical number.
Oh, what do you want to be a contraction? It's just IT. Yeah, what are we supposed to be assessing?
This has nothing to do with helping me learn to read or read.
Wait, what's it? That's the other way. When it's supposed to be a possessive, it's IT. Oh, I got the Strump Bad song messed up. Oh,
it'd be great. He's just like, this doesn't help me learn read or read at all. And in the background, you can just see the fucking cooking tournament going horribly wrong for these characters.
Karibo is dying. Chin 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 is dying. It's like, oh, we were just supposed to be cooking. Why are you stabbing me?
Like, it's fucking like Chaco's head impaled in a pike.
Kill the pig. Drink its blood. Blash it.
Oh, my God.
This took a wild turn at the end. Anyway,
you're right, Nick. We should talk about World Trigger fucking Toriko more often.
Oh, God. World Trigger. My head's getting all light. So chapter 109 of World Trigger, Masato Kagayura, and Kagayura is like, oh, Ko, you're late! I attracted all this attention! And Ko's like, well, that's not my problem. You didn't control yourself. Again, come on. So the two guys who attacked, pissed off Kagura, causing him to attack them, are like, oh, help us, he attacked us all of a sudden. And Murakami is like, well, come on, he can read minds. And they're like, oh, read minds? And he's like, yeah, it's a side effect. A side effect! So they realize what they were thinking about him, and so they skedaddle off all scared. And Murakami kind of scolds Kagura and is like, oh, come on, you're just going to get demoted again if you keep on doing this. And Kagura's like, I don't give a shit. So, Yuma.
He probably wants to say, I don't give a shit, but I don't know. Maybe they were like, you can't swear that much.
Because
he's like, so if I care, being like a cocky twerp's like, oh, can I rewrite his lines for you? He's like, because if I give a shit, fuck those queefy rockets.
So, Yuma's like, so if you're fine being demoted, then you're not trying to be A rank? And Kagura is like, who the fuck are you? And he was like, I'm Yuma Kuga, it's nice to meet you. He's like, oh, so you're those guys who beat Arafune then. Ah, you lost to this shrimp.
You guys suck.
It'll be worth it to look up the logs. And Murakami's like, don't do that. So Kagura's like, oh, well, so you trying to go on an away mission or something? What's going on? Did they kidnap a girl you like? And Yuma says, well, if you want to know that much, why don't you just read my mind? Isn't that your side effect? Kagura is like, my stupid ability isn't that useful. I'm going home! There's too many people here, it's annoying.
All you queef rockets can go fuck off!
I have to remember that one. So, Kagura is like, you know, you just wanted to fight me in order to get intel, and I'm under no obligation to help. We don't care about away missions, but we're not going to let people weaker than us get ahead. If you want to get up to A rank, you'll have to go through us first. Queef rocket.
That's his biggest catchphrase now.
Yeah, it is. So, Yuma's like, so he doesn't really read minds, does he? And Murakami says, it's called emotion perception, which he basically explains people's feelings toward him feel like barbs prickling his skin. Fear, trust, hatred, gratitude, contempt, respect, expectation, worry, they all have different sensations. And the more negative the emotion, the more unpleasant it feels. That's why things like that happen sometimes. So, he is aggressive, and he doesn't like it when people are thinking negatively about it.
Actually, and I like this power a lot, because when it was first described to us as mind reading, I was like, alright, did this guy have one ability? He's like, yeah, I want Jin to see the future. And they're like, oh, you have to develop all the powers. So, fuck, everyone can tell if people are lying, essentially. Because that's... You know, that's what the Kundera can do, or whatever his name is. He can, you know, hear people. You know, he's super hearing, but, like, he's used it practically a lot of times to tell if people are lying. And now Yuma can hear if people are lying. And I was like, oh, if this dude has mind reading as well, I'm like, why even bother bringing Yuma if this guy can also read minds? But, you know, then explaining this, oh, no, he's just very sensitive to people's emotions. I'm like, oh, that's much more interesting.
He goes in to interrogate Inadora, and he's like, ah, fucking monkey! He's like, he doesn't like me. It's like, yeah. Thanks, Kagura. Goodbye.
But, like, I really... Kikuchihara, sorry, that was his name. But I really like... I like this guy in general. He's actually a pretty interesting character to me. You know, just the way we kind of get this and the way Ko explains it afterwards. He's like, he's aggressive and tactless, but he's actually really simple and real. And I like that, like, the way they explain it.
He also says, I'm sure you'd get along, because when I fought against you the other day, I felt you guys were similar.
Yeah, like, these are two very passionate guys. And you get the sense that his power, it doesn't seem like he has a control over it. Like, he just senses it always. And because of his aggressive nature, because of his appearance, he's constantly physically feeling, as well as, you know, mentally feeling, everyone judging him.
Yeah.
And you get the sense, like, oh, well, suddenly I feel like I can really relate to this character, Nick. I hope he ends up with Nasu. I want to pair him up with somebody nice. Yeah.
Someone who won't judge him.
Yeah. She's like, oh, you're hideous. You're a big shark monster. I'm like, oh, Nasu, why? I thought you were better than this. She's like, no, haven't you seen that fucking, that short before Inside Out where the big hideous volcano gets together with the fucking hot volcano? That's not happening in this one, alright? I'm the hot volcano and I'm marrying some big craggy monster over here.
pissed off some people. It was just like, oh, why does the attractive, why doesn't the guy have to be attractive like the woman is? It's like, it's based off of a real life couple who actually sang that song.
Well, I also felt that exact same way, Nick. I was like, why is the one volcano super hot and the other one's a big craggy monster?
Why does the one volcano look like a traditional volcano and the other one just happens to be, like, spirally and stuff so we can put, like...
The other one has curves and, like, a sculpt figure.
It has mountain boobs.
Like, the other one has hair. The other thing's just a big, hideous monster, like, volcano with a face. You're like, ugh. You settled, girl. You really settled.
You sing really nice, but your entire body is your face. I don't know how we're going to have a relationship. Also, this isn't how volcanoes work. You can't just, like, collapse and then come back up in the exact same shape, but also connect it to me.
Also, why would we want volcanoes to fall in love? All they do is explode and murder things.
This entire thing is built on lava sounding like love, which is a stupid pun. Also, this short was way too long, and the song wasn't good.
All of this is awful.
I hate that fucking...
I've seen that movie 3 times in theaters. Every time, that short gets worse.
At least you got to see Inside Out 3 times.
Yes, it was a very good movie. We should have a talk about it sometime, Nick. Anyway.
World trigger. So now we have set up, I guess, the 3 rivals for the 3 characters that are at the most focus on them. And interestingly, they're not all on the same team, so that's nice. And then we cut over to Osamu, who is going to be having a meeting with Izumi of Tachikawa Squad, but he is intercepted by the member that we have gotten to know the least, basically. Just like this, got this flowing black hair, long bangs, he's brushing out of his eyes, and these really sharp eyebrows and slanty eyes. This guy has the most punchable face. So he's like, Tachikawa Squad doesn't have time to entertain B-ranks. After all, we're A-rank number 1. And Osamu's just like, uh-huh. And in really big, bold letters, he's thinking to himself, who is this person?
No, hold on. That's far too much judgment to give Osamu. I think he's just thinking...
Who is this person?
Yeah, I think he's just thinking it really loud. Like, who is this person? I can't imagine Osamu would be like...
He's like, who is this person?
Yeah, he wouldn't have the balls to be like, who's this guy? He'd be like, oh, who's this person? And how may I appease him? Perhaps I could buy him snacks and bring them to him.
So, he's like... I can't believe that you got an appointment with Izumi, and someone's like, well, actually, it was Karasuma who got me the appointment. Karasuma? You mean that loser, flunky? That's your worst. Leave right now. Go away. Go. He's, like, putting his hand in Osama's face and escorting him down the hallway. Oh, God. But then Izumi appears and is like, Yuiga, what the heck are you doing? And fucking drop kicks him in the back.
Just fucking clocks him in the back with a fucking drop kick.
Oh, God. He was like, are you messing with my guests? And Tachikawa comes up behind you like, ah, ha, ha, you guys. Eating each other up. So Izumi's like, I'm sorry I'm late about this. This is Yuiga. He's our baggage. Oh, God.
I like how this is the number one group in all of Border. Number one A-rank group. Like, so the number one team. And, like, Tachikawa is the number one attacker, and Izumi's one of, the top shooters. Like, there's these big deals in their respective groups, and they shit all over their sniper in this chapter. They're like, he's okay, I guess. Like, he's not even as good as most B-ranks.
I guess they're basically saying, Tachikawa and Izumi are just that fucking awesome, or something like that. They're then also introduced to their operator, Yu Kunichika. And she comes out and she's like, what are you guys arguing about? And Izumi's like, this idiot. And she's like, oh, it's not my fault! And so Kunichika looks over at Tachikawa and he's like, Tachikawa, say something, Captain Mike.
Stop, no, think of the children.
He's like eating a cookie or something. He's like, don't fight. Yuiga, you don't have enough class, so be more aware of what you do. Listen up, I'm gonna get all motivational. Look at our emblem. There are 3 swords. The first is me. Second is Izumi, and the third is my second sword.
I like busted out laughing when he did that.
It's so perfectly, because it's all this build up, And then he's like, "Yo, focus on the emblem," and then focus over to Yuita's face, and he's like, stopping crying. He's like, "Oh, he's gonna say something nice about me." And then back over to Tachikawa, who looks so fucking proud of himself.
He's like, "And the third sword's my second sword." Everyone's crying, and then the fucking operator comes in, and she's like, "What about me?" He's like, "No, you're gonna be the moon in the background." Oh, cool! She's so satisfied by that answer. She's like, "Sweet."
Yuita's nowhere on the fucking thing. He's like, kind of like, "Here, get out a microscope. You see that one little speck that's clinging on to the moon for dear life? Yeah, that's you."
He's like, "There's a fourth sword. It still wouldn't be you." Sometimes I'll put a third sword in my mouth when I'm cosplaying Zoro.
The third sword is just Jin. Oh, God. So we skip ahead a little bit. They're in the strategy room, and Izumi's like, "Oh, you want to be able to score points by yourself? Yeah, that sounds like a fun idea." Completely contradicting everything that everyone's told Osama to this point. And so he's like, "Yeah, you know, sometimes the whole team just gets defeated, and you're left on your own. So, a bit of that is sound logic. You know, it's nice if you could work with your team, but what if they get eliminated?" So he's like, "Okay, so what did Urashiyama tell you?" And Osama says, "Well..." Flashback. So, we actually see a target, or I guess that they've been demonstrating on, and Rashima is like, "Alright, skills I just taught you focus on breaking down the opponent's defenses. Without a defense, even a little triangle will cause damage, and all combat bodies have the same durability." Very important note there. So there's, I guess, not going to be anyone who's like, "Oh, my body is super tough."
There's no, like, fucking, like, "I'm wearing body armor," or anything like that.
I guess it's possible that some use a Trion shield in the shape of a body, but it's nice to know it's just like, you know, physical capabilities mean no difference when you're attacked by a Trion weapon. So he's like, "Oh, you know, like a sniper using a bagworm and shooters and gunners going into full attack mode, those are very vulnerable. And it's a good idea to focus on people who are defenseless to begin with." And so I was like, "Oh, thanks, Tokieta." And Arashima was like, "Okay, Kitora, do you have any advice for Ikumo?" He's like, "Not really."
She's like, "You suck ass."
Well, she says, "At his level, I don't think he's ready to learn." Which is actually, I think, way more reserved than I thought that she was going to be in her criticisms.
A very mature answer for her.
Yeah, just like, he's not ready yet, you know, is basically what she's saying. And so I love this. It was just like, Kitora's so obnoxious all the time.
Also, I took this as a reason, like, they had an indirect interaction, so +7 relationship points, Nick.
She did look at him and talk about him.
Yes, in a negative way, but she did.
I like how she's not even, like, addressing him directly. He's like, "He's not ready."
She's like, yeah, like, she's not even, like, fully looking at him either. She could just be, like, looking off to the side or something like that. But in my mind, that's moving their relationship forward.
I do appreciate that over time, Kitora's, like, interactions with Osamu have changed for her end of things as she comes to realize, okay, he's not that big of an idiot. He's not that... He's actually kind of a nice guy because he didn't take credit for what I told him and so on and so forth.
So, Nick, what this is all saying to me is one day I do have a chance with Olivia Wilde.
Yeah, we'll see. Anyway, so... Izumi is like, "All right, well, it sounds like Urashiyama told you everything, so what's left for me to teach?" And someone's like, "Well, I hear you're an expert at composite shots, and I got a first-hand taste of their power in my match the other day." Izumi's like, "Oh, so you want to learn composite shots? Well, they are powerful, but amateurs leave themselves open. You need experience as a shooter." He's like, "All right, let's... Yuiga, come here. All right, he's the weakest among the A-rank. Wait, he doesn't even compare well against some B-rank. But he's still better than you solo, Four Eyes. You might be able to beat him if you get creative." And so Osama's still thinking to himself, "So why is he A-rank number one?" So Izumi says, "If you get 100 wins from him, one-on-one, then I'll teach you composite shots." And Osama's like, 100 wins? And you were just looking around like, what the fuck's going on here?
Why? I was so happy today.
Why do I have to lose to this dork 100 times?
Why is it my turn under the barrel? What did I do to deserve this?
Oh, God. Okay, so, that was World Trigger. I'm still, you know, enjoying, you know, little stuff from this, you know, just kind of figuring out, like, okay, what are they going to do and how they're going to improve and stuff. Or Osama specifically, and, you know, Chika and Yuma just discovering stuff about their opponents. So,
yeah.
It's all good.
Very good.
Yeah.
I think that's it. That's weekly manga recap. That we did it.
Took a little while because of the technical difficulty we had midway through, but for an episode where our manga recommendation took about 10 minutes to talk about, we got a lot of discussion going.
Well, so, we also spent like 30 minutes like going off on random tangents about Inside Out and fucking Cuban sandwiches.
Right. Let's move on let's wrap up. Thank you everyone for joining us here on twitch.tv/RelloT, where we record the show Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Although sometimes we do need to change it up like we did this week. Next week we should be back to our usual time, however. But in case there is another change, just follow us on Twitter. He's at RulerT. I'm at Y Ruler of Time. Una Han is dead, never coming back.
Oh, you fucking clutch nailed that one.
Be sure to check out all of our past episodes on weeklymangarecap.podbean.com, which within a month, there we go, is going to be the only place you can check out all of our stuff, because Blip is going away, unfortunately. Also, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, but that just basically takes them from where they're hosted on podbean.com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you can still get it from there, and it's very convenient to a lot of people.
And plus, if you leave a comment, leave a rating, that helps other people to discover the show. So please take some time out of your day in order to do that.
Helps us grow. Thank you to The Night Seraph, who says, fantastic manga podcast. WMR is one of the few podcasts I actually make time to listen to each week. I've been exposed to many great manga because of this podcast, and I've been just as entertained at Chris and Dick's rant about reviews of the bad stuff. So thank you very much.
Also, be sure to ask us questions and suggest future manga for us to read by sending them to weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com. You've got a recommendation, which you'll be naming at the end of this. Special thanks as well go out to Steve Mann, our title card artist. You can check out his work at rockfanboy.deviantart.com, patreon.com/stevemann, idrawboobs.tumblr.com. And also special thanks go to the infamous Planet and Felix Dark for making the visual editions of our podcast. As mentioned earlier, Infamous Planet went back and did a visual edition of Freezing, which is one of our worst manga recommendations of all time. Go and check that out and all the other stuff.
I forgot some of the god-awful things that happened in that series.
Yeah, we really cracked that open.
Yeah, we really nailed that in. Which is why this time I wanted to pick a series that... It's not like I'm not picking it because I'm like, oh, it's god-awful. But I wanted to pick a series that is as well-detailed as something that's going to have a lot of discussion material on it. So this is a series we've had recommended a ton of times. Most recently recommended to us by Isaac. And... this is a long-running shonen series, so expect us to maybe take a little bit of time with this one, but our next series we'll be taking a look at for Weekly Manga Recap is Shaman King.
Oh, God, that's a long one.
I imagine we probably won't get all the way through it, or we may skip around, because it is a series that's complete at this point, but we'll take a look at it. We haven't done a long-running shonen in a while, but again, expect this one might take us a little bit to get through.
Okay, so that is going to be our next recommendation. Bye, everybody.
Also, somebody needs to remind me to get that random list set up so that I can get, like, a random fucking off-the-wall immediate let's see who has a better random celebrity impression ready to go. Here's a new character, and I'm like, boom! William Shatner! And Nick, I'm like, you have to give me your William Shatner now.
There's something on the plane.
Oh, my. Is there something on the plane, Nick?
Yours has a weird little lilt to it, but I like it.
This is gay, William Shatner.
Oh, that's fabulous.
Can I suck your dick, perhaps? I'm
okay,
quickly becoming a vampire.
Taking that a little far now.
Bye.
We love all of our gay listeners, but...